We're in. What, the new episode? Yeah. Point of Rouge podcast.
Yeah, there's no Jamaican food, but it's coming.
It's coming.
What's coming?
It's early.
Because I saw what Righty got. If I get anything less, love,
we can order right now as we're talking. It's very local.
So what food is it?
We'll get it through the window again.
What do you want?
Yeah, I'll take that. But
the delivery team.
Yeah, I don't want it to be too spicy.
Ruh!
Yeah, no,
that's the white side.
My belly sometimes gets a bit mad. I don't want to have to interrupt the interview, bruv. So.
Oh, and I'm acting like that. Yeah, toileting. Yeah, I bought toilet tissue. We're good, man.
I saw someone say, don't eat again on the mics because it sounds disgusting.
It does, though.
Is it?
We'll have a couple bites and put it down. Last time I clocked it. When it came in, I was munching. I was like, shit. You know, and you put it away and you're like...
Yeah, that's what I don't know if you saw me do it. I came this way straight away, it's like eating like that because I already get it on half cast.
People complain so much on half cast.
Do you know what? I'll do it for after that. Like, I'll eat mine at 1 o'clock, bruv.
Yeah.
Proper things
like that. Yeah, like whatever. Whenever we finish.
Yeah.
How long does it take when you order it? How long does it take?
It's around the corner, so literally like 10, 15 minutes.
Oh, wait till we finish then.
It's a Caribbean one, so it takes like.
Yeah, the timing will be different then.
4 days, you fool.
We're here again in your living room. Very organic settings.
Yeah, it's nice.
I like it, bruv.
Yeah,
the trainer selection.
Yeah, bro,
it's jarring, bro.
All freebies, isn't it?
Bare freebies, bro. I won't lie to you. Shout out Nike.
Do you buy clothes?
Very rarely. I used to spend loads of money on clothes back in the day, but now I'm fortunate, man. A lot of people send me stuff.
Yeah, it's weird how it goes like that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it? Mad. It feels better on your skin. Do you know what I think?
Because it's free.
It feels nice, bro. It fits better. Everything feels better when you get some Freemans.
I feel like a child again because obviously you didn't pay for nothing as a child. Your parents paid for it, so it's almost like, wow, I've got parents all over the world now. Like Nike got some parents.
There's something that I do love doing is like I buy retro football shirts. Mm. I go on eBay or whatever where I can find those kind of rare ones. That for me is like the one thing I like buying.
Is it?
I used to be trainers, but obviously now, no point.
You see that thing we've done on BT?
Yes, I've seen it.
Have you hit them guys up?
Yeah, classic football
shirts,
guys.
They've got everything.
They've got everywhere.
You know what I love? What they've got as well, the tracksuit tops.
Those?
From back in the day as well.
You see, them man, they need to start linking, man, a bit more properly, though.
Yeah, they're nuts.
Any chance you could, like,
I'll bring you in. They're a good guy. I think they're from, like...
Nah, I'm in touch with them. Manchester,
they got some bad shirts.
I'm like, bro, you need to just... But I need to plug me properly.
Come on, let's do the one plug.
We should be plugging this.
That's what I'm saying. Yo, CFS, bruv, we're here. We're calling you out. Where's the shirts?
My cousin gave me this one. Scott Gilmore gave me this. He's played for Nottingham Forest.
Who else played in that kit?
Oh,
Des Little.
Bart Williams, you were saying. Stoney played in it. Stuart Pearce played in it. Fam, this is the days of autographs. Like, they all signed it and gave it to me.
Beautiful.
I was so gassed.
Kits back then were better, in my opinion.
Real. I still got the tag.
Wow.
The seams are still slyly in as well.
Bruv.
This is old school, fam. I feel
The kits back in the day were better. Mad kits, like the Liverpool one with the stripes there, remember that one?
Adidas one,
that was sick. The Arsenal one they tried to bring out again, like the retro one.
Mm. Oh, the 890.
That kit was unreal.
I love the Dreamcast. With the gunners at the back.
But you know who else I liked as well? Spurs Holston Pills kit.
Yeah.
Oh, that's old school.
But even the material for me, it was just better.
Only thing is, they were baggy kits though. That's
they were baggy,
I look at pictures of myself when I first came in West Ham, mate. They were for like four sizes up.
But it was kind of wavy. I kind of like the baggy fits sometimes.
The 90s fits, I think, are better.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, because now you can rock it, like, out.
Yeah. To play...
Was it hard?
The tighter kit's better.
Yeah, okay.
So you feel a lot more lightweight.
How's it been going, though, Rio? How's everything going with you?
It's all right, man. It's all right. I've been busy, man. Summer, ain't it? The kids, bruv. My kids had eight or something weeks off.
8 weeks off?
Bruv.
We had five when we were younger.
Mate, if you had six, you were doing it. But eight and a bit weeks, I think it was. And when they went back, mate, the cartwheels around the playground I was doing. me and my missus were like, wow, that went so slow. But you got to keep them entertained.
Yeah.
But watch when your kids get to like school and that and they're going properly, you're going to be like, the summer holidays... It's like a madness. Like they're at home. You've got all you're thinking about is what we're going to do tomorrow then. What am I going to do tomorrow? Whereas normally it's just like they're going to school. They might have a bit of football after. My little girl that's horse riding or something, whatever. But so you ain't got to think too much. It's on autopilot.
I need to think a lot
holidays
now.
Holidays is mad.
I had them for the holidays. I had them for 3 months.
There's only so many parks you can go to, bro.
Bro, they're bored of the parks. They're bored of every... Like, they'll go... I take them to school as well. They'll go to school, come back. I'm tired from working all day. And they're looking at me like, Daddy, I'm just like... Bro, you've just come in from school. How can you want something to do now?
You're meant to go sleep.
They're not how, understand.
Because obviously I've seen the change in Poet since he's had kids. Mm. He's still a madman. But there is an element of, I think his drive is bigger. He takes stuff focus. A lot more focused. I mean, maybe I need to pop out a kid, but having kids for you, how much did that shift maybe your life situation and how you view the world?
I think you just start thinking more about the future. Like, you think long term. I always thought short term. Then I had kids and I started thinking, right, I want to put something in place for hopefully that they can go into when they get older.
Yeah.
Like, there'd be nothing more pleasing for me than to see my kids walk into a business that I've helped create. Like, they ain't going to start at the top. They're going to start as being like, I don't know, whatever it is that's the most basic, and then they can earn the right to go through. They ain't going to go through, you have to earn the right, but the opportunity to work will be there.
Mm.
But I feel a lot of kids lack the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can create that opportunity for them to have a foot on the ladder, that'll be, that's why, you know what? One of my friends I met when I lived in Manchester called Mahmoud and Nurez. The Kamani family, they own Boohoo and Pretty Little Thing, Boohoo Man. Wow. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're lit.
They done my restaurant in Manchester's with them. After a few years of friendship, and then we just opened that and various other things. But lovely family, but boy, the drive in that family and the way that I see the fathers groom their kids to have a work ethic.
Okay.
Mad. You can't create Pretty Little Thing, Boohoo Man, and all these other companies that they've got, yeah, which young boys are starting now. These young boys, Umar, they're starting them, Samir, without having drive. Like, everyone's going to go, oh, but their dad owned Boohoo, and he had it all set up. Yeah, that's cool. He had it all set up, but then they've got to go and run with it.
They made it lit.
They made it proper.
Because you see it everywhere.
They smashed it. They have killed it. You just done New York Fashion Week, bruv.
Serious?
Pretty Little Thing, yeah. Like, oh, wow. Ridiculous. Like, so that time, yeah, it was people like that, being surrounded by people like that who have been successful in their own right, but are then saying to their kids and setting a tone for their kids and saying, listen, you lot are going to have to, I've got money, but that ain't your money. You have to work. Like,
so that can probably be a trap, especially, I mean, you're from Peckham, you didn't grow up with a lot. And you're going to have kids, you have kids now. Is it, you know, it can be tempting, I reckon, to just be like, here's the, like, you know, just have it, innit?
It's mad tempting, man.
Yeah.
It's, you know what the mad thing is when you lot will be the same. You do all this work here to give your kids, to give them everything, to give them, that's what you think initially. I just want to be able to give my kids, they need something new, I'll give it to them. If all of a sudden your kids are born and you're sitting there thinking, if I keep giving them, where's their hunger going to come from? Like, my two boys want to be footballers. Like,
Simba.
If I keep just, you know, in a minute. But if I keep just, like, giving them stuff and making it sound easy, and because the football world now for kids growing up is so full of cotton wool, protected, everything's organised, everything's set out for them, laid out for them, so it makes everything so easy. When there's going to be that time of disappointment or downtimes, they ain't going to be conditioned and ready to be able to deal with it. So,
do you know what? Out of curiosity, because that's not to move completely away from parenthood, because that's a really interesting point, and I really want to get your opinion on this. I saw a stat the other day that says that this is the youngest the Premier League's been ever. But it's a good point you make. I do think kids are wrapped in cotton wool in the game, but then we've got more young players involved in the game. Have they got the balance right? Or are we walking to an age where in which, you know, some of the younger players are going to make demands of 300 bags a week and they're 19 years old of like 5 appearances? Like,
if they can get it, I'll make them right. I would have done it. If I was a kid and then I had the opportunity to earn that 100, 200 grand a week after 5 appearances, as much as it is, you feel on one hand it's wrong, if I'm in their shoes, I'm doing it. If I think, if they're going to give it to me, do it.
What's the long-term damages of that? Because you know what it is? It's like, I reckon from a distance, I could say to someone, do it. But if it was actually my child, I'd be so concerned with that. That's a lot of money for someone so young to handle. I'd be concerned if, I wonder what's going to happen after a year and a half.
When it comes down to the management and the team around that kid.
Okay.
That's what I'm more concerned about. The club and the management. Yeah, if you're going to give the kid 50 grand a week after a few appearances, fine. But then you got to put something around him to protect him. Like, are you going to let him have access to all of that? Are you good at schooling on how to spend it or how to invest it? Like, so if he's got all of that around him, and that's, I'm involved in an agency, I'm like a mentor ambassador for a New Era agency. They manage managers, players, retired players, etc. But that's the only reason I got involved, because the concerns and the attention to the detail that around the contract, not just the contract, get the kids the best deals, but around that is more important for me. Mm-hmm. Are they protected? Are they understanding like how much money they're getting and what that can do for not only them but generations? Can they change the next generation of their family?
That's amazing, bro.
So, but going back to what you're saying about the kids, it's like, I take my boys sometimes back to work my estate, and yet it's different now. There used to be, because I say to them, there's all these kids on my estate, come out the door, there's always 15, 20 kids about, always can rustle up a few to get a game. Someone's always got a ball. I never had a ball, couldn't get a ball, but my mate always had a ball. The family downstairs knocked the door, they're not out, but borrow me a ball, please. Come on, man, please, borrow the ball. Then all of a sudden, there's about 10 men out there playing football.
That's lit. Yeah,
but now, you go there, it's a ghost town, bruv.
Bruv!
It's a ghost town.
That is... I was in New York. Every part where they've put a bit of grass is full. I don't know why it's like that here. Like, New York, it's obviously New York. Like, the football there isn't that big. Obviously, they've got big immigrant communities that love football. The Mexicans, the whatever's around there. But they're active.
Bro.
I wonder what it is here that the kids aren't out. Like, I go to the park sometimes, to the playground, etc. There's no one really there. No one. Like the community spirit in London or the UK. I don't know.
I don't know what it is.
People aren't out.
Yeah, my kid said to me, "Dad, this ain't what you explained."
Oh, wow.
This ain't like, where's everyone?
Oh, shit.
And I was like, I had no answer. I was like, whoa, I don't know. Everyone's at home with the iPad, maybe. I don't know. Like, but maybe there's so much more information for people now that they're hearing about all of this crime, all of these mad people about, that they're just going to the kids, "You ain't going out of my sight now. So you're going to stay in, I put you on an iPad and you just chill with me. I know where you are, there's no problems."
I think it's the conditioning as well. I'm thinking about right now, like, culture is something that I think is neglected within the UK quite heavily. So growing up and playing football with a sign that says no ball games allowed is very much a part of my culture growing up. Very much a part of, I imagine, Vujic's culture. It's only now become a thing. I see like an advert the other day, no ball games allowed, and the guy's like, "Yeah, man, this JJ. Is what I see." Bro, I'm thinking to myself, bro, like, that, first of all, that's something we done in the Puma advert when we made a trainer. Like, we made that a mad iconic thing. But before all of that, that is so embedded in so much people's culture. It just takes someone like Harry Kane to come out and say that. That's what I was involved in, because I just think that part of culture is neglected so much that they say, nah, we have to make it better, because there's other footballers that grew up in other circumstances and there's high profile players. The players that grew up like that, they're always a little bit like this, or, do you know, we kind of neglect us and make it like it's Ian Wright, and then Ian Wright's a problem in the public and so on and so forth. They associate that type of surrounding for that type of player. But if they actually celebrated that within the culture and said, "You know what, this is the estate where Rio Ferdinand came from and these are all the problems he had," and sort of kept it the way it is and glossed it up, not too much, just a little bit, I think people would appreciate it more. Like, Zlatan's got a place in Malmo that me and Vuj went to in 2015. The estate is a little bit glossed up, but it's not far removed from what it was. So now, knowing that I'm a young kid playing where Zlatan played, I'm going to be so excited and gassed. I just don't think that the UK celebrates any areas like that within working class areas. They just rejuvenate,
you know, I think
it
would be cool.
Cluster, and that's it.
You know, I think it would be cool. Obviously, the council probably won't do that, but I think they do.
Money,
that.
Man.
Like in Paris, it's very big. Like, Mbappe came from the estates.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know if they got like a big painting of him on the wall of like on the back of an estate or something. Like, I think we need to really put these highlights on. I don't know how they get the funding, if we can do that privately or whatever, but I, as a child, I definitely would have loved to have seen someone local on the side of a building, so every time you step out you go, "Yeah, it's possible." Do you know what I'm saying? Like in an estate in Beckham, why not have Rio's face on the side, or Ian Wright where he's from? Put it on the side, just saying, like on the estate, so when these boys, girls, whoever's coming out, they go,
mural,
wow,
type thing.
Do murals.
It's
like
I don't know, it's
like in Brazil they do it to everyone, yeah, when they come
everyone,
from the favelas.
It's like, what is the reason why the kids, it's more like, what's the reason why there aren't the kids on the streets? Is it because the hanging about on the streets is a negative thing now?
Yeah.
Whereas when we were younger, we hung about, like,
yeah,
like you played football or you whatever, but you hung about for the majority of the day, but just getting jokes and messing about. But hanging about now is frowned upon.
But it's a generational thing. Weird. I hung about because I saw the older generation hanging about. Now, the generation looking at the older generation is in their ass on the YouTube. So it's like, well, that's what I'm going to do then because that's who we're sort of learning off. That's why I think Vuja's point is really integral. That if you knew that Rio Ferdinand used to kick football in this spot, it doesn't have to be a Rio Ferdinand memorial. Weird, it needs to be a surprise. Like, you just come to the estate and then there's like this picture of Rio Ferdinand and a bit of information about him and that's all it is. It's not like it's a... Then it's like subtly there. You're just like, wait... Rio's from this estate. Mm. And then you look at the estate and you're like, Rio. Mm. All of a sudden, your view of this estate has changed. Mm. Your view of success and how to get there has changed. So much things change within your mind that you begin to say, I might send my kids there. You see the pathway. Yeah. And I just don't think that people see that pathway. I'll like do in the Tottenham. Murals,
man.
Bruv, just get loads of areas.
Can you spray? Can you paint?
No, but I got you.
I saw there was a AJ Tracy mural.
I saw that.
In Tottenham. And no, but this is what confused me. I was like, that is sick. He's holding like a little goat in it for the promotion of his album. I was like, yeah, this looks sick. And it made me, you know, even inspires me to be like, oh, I need to be, like, oh, I can look at, like, do some more creative stuff. Mm. Just seeing that. And then like a week later, it was gone.
I'll be honest with you, I wasn't.
Why don't they keep it?
Don't say that. No, but they shouldn't keep that there, though. This is what I mean. For the simple fact that AJ Tracy's from a part of London.
No. My point is just about the mural thing.
No, of course. But when I saw that, because I remember that was right next to Tottenham Swan. So Tottenham Swan used to be here. They changed it to a Pizza Go-Go or a Domino's Pizza. So it's across the road from the bus garage.
We're going
to
say he's from West.
And I saw like, yeah, he's from West. He's got a song called Ladbroke Grove. I think this culture is so important to me. It's like, present somebody in their environment and let, even if they're a Spurs fan, there's no rules. Give him the Spurs shirt and let him promote his album in Ladbroke Grove where he grew up. So there's like a 50, 60, 70 year old woman who walks past and remembers him when he was just a little boy. Mm. Her view now is like, oh, I just thought he was any estate. Yeah. Look what he's doing.
No, definitely like, put, I think locally, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, but my wider point is of course just to see these murals in areas which people view negatively. I, for one, have lived always in a city, London, 13 different areas.
Mm.
Like, I've never had a problem.
Mm.
And there's actually so much love in what people call ends or whatever they want to call it. Mm. I find there's so much love there. I actually struggle. I don't like it in Kensington, personally.
Mm. Never
do I. For me, like, when I go there, I feel a bit like, there's no smiling, there's no community spirit.
That's what it is, you know.
But then again, it's like, why aren't the kids out? I don't know, maybe, but like I said, is it maybe the iPad thing? Is it that I genuinely think in this country, yeah,
and we don't celebrate it. In the States, yeah, for example, yeah, one of the most iconic places in LA for me was when I watched White Men Can't Jump, that basketball court.
Yeah, the court, yeah.
Bro, 2013, when I've gone there, I've gone to the basketball court and I'm like, Vuj, this is where they shot White Men Can't Jump. Like, why am I that excited about going to LA, something that I'm not really connected to? It's because they celebrate that, like, they celebrate them places within their
area.
Like,
you see, like, Top Boy.
Yeah.
You see Top Boy now. You need an iconic piece of creative work to be able to do that, though.
Yeah, like, for instance,
Top Boy,
true.
If they're filming in a certain estate, that estate becomes iconic. Right, it's that... And all of a sudden, it's like, look, even Fringe, you look at TOWIE. There's like, as much as you might call it bubblegum TV or what, there's like coach loads of people that fly over and go and do coach tours around Essex.
But you know why though? It's called The Only Way is Essex. When I watch Top Boy and all these shows, the one thing they lack is identity.
Mm.
It's like they're afraid to go, this is an estate in South London and Giggs used to live there. And I'm not asking them to do that. I would be gassed what? You mean that? You mean Giggs? D Giggs?
He
lived here.
Yeah, exactly. That's now, like, my kids would love that.
Bro, if I lived next door, I'd be like, bro, I'll tell everyone, fam. You know what? I can't lie, fam. I live next door. Like, I've heard some stories about Steel Bangles. He used to live in an estate, yeah? And like Idris Elba was across the road and Wiley was there.
Mm.
When I've heard this, I'm like, wait. Why is this not documented and celebrated and taught? Yeah. Like, why don't we celebrate these things?
We're putting it out into the universe, maybe. Hopefully, there's some sort of series that can be done.
But there is a good one. The next one, I want to see it. Something Blue something. Film coming out.
Is it?
About Peckham Boys and Ghetto Boys. Like, from Peckham, from where I'm from.
No way.
So, gangs when we were younger. Two different gangs going at it. But I obviously remember all this when I was younger. But there's a film coming out now. So, that could be something that's quite... Where iconic. You go, right, that's the estate. Oh, I see that. It's a lot of stuff like that coming out.
And just getting more sharing, exposure. But sharing more positivity, I think, is also important about different communities in London. Yeah, because there obviously there is the
there
the
are bad good stuff stories that come from these stories, but they're not stories that the wider press or media want to promote or
and
talk
how,
about.
Yeah, how do you feel about the wider press and media? Obviously, you've been through a lot of criticism. Obviously, you've made mistakes here and there.
Mm.
It seems to be in a. It's always been a strange place, I think, from people from.
I've always felt like a scapegoat for for the media, my generation. I always felt that. I've always felt that I was. Always punished and made an example of for everything, and that might have been because I was too, I don't know, I might have been a bit brash when I was younger, said and done things and didn't think about the consequences enough maybe, or I don't know, because I was, I don't know, man, I was just, I've always felt like punishments that I had were more severe than anyone else. I was all, it was just like, I always accepted responsibility. That's one thing. I always held my hands up and said, you know, I have made a mistake. But then it would always lead me to red. These guys are treating me different. That's all I ever thought, especially with punishments. Like, what I've just done isn't as bad, or was as bad as what someone else done, or is on the same level as what someone else done over there a year ago, 6 months ago. But you're treating me like this. Wow. Right. So then it led me to believe, like, or think about why. Is it my colour? Is it my background? Is it the football club I'm playing at? Like, what is it like? And you'd think that because I play at a big football club, you get a bit of protection, maybe. Nah. I was getting... I got some licks were.
Yeah, because obviously we spoke to Ian Wright. He spoke about very similar issues. Black footballer. He's been killing it. The same as you. And then you had Raheem Sterling. Although I think he got... We all know the criticism he was getting from the mainstream media is just insane. But I think it's just, they always do it like in a very nuanced way. So it's not overt.
It's always that one. What do you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
They leave a little gap in the where they can go, where they can flip it on you and you go, oh, so I didn't mean it like that. Okay, I understand now. They make you almost feel guilty for saying what you said.
Bro,
do you know what I mean?
It's fucked, isn't
it? It's mad, like...
Because then Raheem's flipped it, I feel. I feel like Raheem's such an integral figure in flipping that narrative. And then almost, it's been funny to observe those media outlets that before would have been criticising him are now like, Raheem is our... You know, they're kind of positively going... And it's just so... strange, these dynamics that it definitely seems to have to do something with obviously ethnicity and background.
100%.
I think it's always easier to...
He highlighted a couple of good points. The one about the house, one kid, and then Phil Foden, the way they reported on the two boys buying houses was massive difference.
Because Raheem's such a lovely guy.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, you can't... For him to be painted with a bad boy image,
because
he wears a chain or two, is the most... It's not even subtle anymore.
No, it's because Raheem... You know what it is? People are scared of what they don't know. So Raheem, you didn't know Raheem.
Yeah.
When he was at Liverpool and when he signed for City, did you really know him personality-wise if you didn't know him? I'm talking Poet's different. Okay. You interviewed him. Yeah. I'm saying, if you was looking at him, you'd think, he don't speak. Some people take in that quietness and not talking for ignorance and arrogance. So I think a lot of people were looking at him like that, and then added to that is his background, etc., and they think, you know what, they make a decision about him straight off the back of that. And he's not said a word yet. So how can you judge someone without hearing them or speaking to them or finding out a bit more about them, what's behind that exterior? So it's I feel we was judged unfairly, 100%. And people do that sometimes. And I don't really know my understanding, so I'm going to paint a picture of him. And that's why I feel social media, that's why I got in social media at the beginning. Because I had these idiots behind a desk painting a caricature of me in the media and saying, I'm like this, I'm like that, he's like that. They don't know me. And I was thinking, right, who's the guy? I look at his name and I think, I don't even know this guy. I never met him in my life, never interviewed me. Who is this guy?
Mm-hmm.
So social media became so a powerful thing for me. Like, that's why I always thought, I'm going to talk on social media and give kids, young people, different generations a clearer picture of what I'm... Listen, it ain't everything of who I am, but it's a clearer picture that I'm shaping rather than someone else is shaping.
Yeah.
Do you know what? One thing I want to touch upon is that you spoke about Raheem Sterling, and 100 years from now, Raheem Sterling is going to be one of the most integral figures when it comes to young black boys within football in the UK. That is just 100% a fact. But I think that's even more echoed because it's a social media era. So because of that, things are shared more frequently. Mm. There's one thing that you've done that my dad said, no one's going to appreciate until racism becomes so much of a problem, it's given to the individuals that actually suffer it to solve it. Right now, the people going through racism are not the people trying to solve it. It's a bag of ad agencies and YouTube channels that are getting a bit of money to go and do this kick it out nonsense. It's all absolute bollocks to me. One of the things that you've done, which was integral, and I remember my dad made everyone watch Match of the Day. He made everyone in our house watch the Match of the Day. He's like, if you ever want to watch something good, you should watch this tonight. And it's when yourself and Anton didn't wear this t-shirt that every footballer had to wear across the country and you decided not to wear it. The question I've always had and I've always wanted to ask you was, bro, the know-how, why did you make that decision right there and then? Why did you know that was the right decision to make so young, especially surrounded by a bag of people, like you said, don't know. So they don't understand. So they come to their own conclusion. You're a rebel. You don't want to listen to nobody. You have to deal with all of that, Rio, and you still did it.
Yeah. Obviously, my brother went through a situation, innit, with racism. And it was dealt with, like, I would love to swear, but it was dealt with poorly.
Yes, like, I agree.
Disgracefully. You can swear the way it was dealt with was very poor in my eyes. And so I felt like, see, when you have an issue like that that came up, a racist issue, the likes of Kick It Out and Show Racism the Red Card, this is what you're here for. These moments, this is your time to ring the bell and go, boom, this is now, we're going to go in and act. And they didn't do that. And I remember my mum saying to them, you put on a t-shirt and walk into court with my brother, with my son. Put on the Kick It Out t-shirt and walk into court with my son now. You ain't taking sides. You walk in the middle on your own, just walk in. But you're going into this court case and kick it out of there. Show people. Humming and ahhing. All right. So what I knew from that day, when my mum told me that, I just knew I can't wear that t-shirt. And the problem was, it was a miscommunication between Sir Alex Ferguson and me.
Yeah.
He came out in an interview on the Friday before the game on the weekend and said, they asked him, are all your players going to wear the shirt? Knowing that obviously my brother's been in this case. I didn't tell anyone I wasn't wearing a t-shirt, but he said, obviously, he's the leader of us, of our team of Man United. Yeah, of course my players are wearing it. I've never had a problem before. They're going to wear it. And I didn't know he'd done that interview. I just went into the game. And when you go in the change room, all the shirts are up. Your training kit to go out for the warm-up and the Kick It Out shirt with T-shirts on your peg. Everyone normally puts it on. So I didn't say nothing to no one. I just went to go out to the warm-up. I remember Albert, the kit man, famous in Manchester. He's a nice, great guy. He come up to me, son, you got to wear the shirt. Put the Kick It Out shirt on. It's there. No, I'm not wearing it, Albert. What do you mean? Oh, the gaffer's going to kill me. You got to put it on. I'll get these and I've got to deliver it to the players. So Albert, move. I ain't wearing the shirt. And I ended up getting like a bit upset. Listen, just come out. I don't want to talk. Don't worry. Whatever the manager says, I'll deal with the manager. Or you can talk to me. I went out. Obviously, he's gone and told the manager, which he had to. I come in. The manager knows that's going to be a story. And he went mad, boy. The hairdryer came out like,
serious.
Oh, obviously, because he sees it as a disrespect to him.
Oh.
I've told the world you're going to be everyone's wearing a t-shirt. But through lack of communication, he didn't know my point of view. Now, if he'd spoke to me on the Friday before the press conference and said, Rhea, obviously, this is a bit of a contentious issue. Are you going to wear that t-shirt? I would have told him then, no, because I don't believe in them. I don't believe in that organisation. I don't believe they've acted the right way when a big case came about, and I don't really believe in what they're doing. That's it, simple as that. And if you don't, I know for a fact, Gaffer, if you didn't believe in something, you wouldn't do it. But because he didn't, I went out there, and obviously all the craziness started coming in the media saying, oh, Rio, I got called everything. A rebel, like you said, a disgrace. I had black players, ex-players coming out and saying, this is disgraceful, how can he do that? I was thinking, wow, you guys are... Really? Is this how you're moving? I can't believe it.
In the hood, we rated you, though. I can't lie.
I lost a lot of respect.
That's what I'm daft, like.
But I lost a lot of respect for people who I respected at that time from the way they reacted to that situation, because that's a moment where I just believed that, listen, you all knew what happened. You all knew everything behind us, what was going on. It was very public. It was there for everyone to see, yeah?
Very public.
So how people were trying to say that, like, I was a rebel, or I was out of order, or wrong for doing what I couldn't understand it. And the mad thing is, this is why Sir Alex Ferguson is the man, because he fined me 2 weeks' wages that on an instance there on the spot. And I remember after the game he came in and said, lucky you won today. Because we won, I was thinking, well, we better win because he's going to come down again on me. So we won. And then the next morning I went into his office early to go and speak to him about it and said, listen, Gaffer, I'll let, like, and the way he spoke to me there, man, I would have run through a brick wall. I'd have done it anyway, but I'd have been set on fire and everything and run through a brick wall for him. Because he said to me, like, listen, my only mistake, and he spoke to his wife, he said, the only mistake that she said, she's told him, he said, she's told me this, that you didn't speak to the kid before you went into the press conference. If you'd spoke to the kid before you went into the press conference, you wouldn't have left yourself open for embarrassment and for all of this that come with it. And he said, so that's my mistake. You're not going to be fine, it's fine. Well, he didn't say that. He said, that's my mistake, so I understand what you're doing. Whether I believe in it or I understand it, that's not the conversation, but I respect your decision and what you're doing. You can go. So I went to walk out and said, boss, what about the fine? So he said, the fine. Okay, we waiver the fine, it's fine. Okay, I said, thanks, boss, cheers, and walked out.
That is rude, boy, Alex
Ferguson. But he was like, yeah. Understanding, man. And it's just like, I lost so much respect for people, man. I just, in that whole situation, just like, I thought, boy, this is your time to speak, man. This is your time to come out. And there was a lot, like...
That's what I'm saying. It's brick. Like, I remember it like it was yesterday. One thing I can even say to
you. Do you know
BBC,
what, sir? Do you know what as well? Like, yeah. You want me to wear this T-shirt? You didn't do nothing yet, but my mum's getting bullets sent to her house. My mum's getting her windows put in. Like... You want me to wear your T-shirt and you haven't said a word. You haven't stood up. You haven't done what we asked you to do, like one thing. And I'm not saying take sides. Yeah, I'm saying walk in and make people know that you are here. It's a big case and you lot are standing up walking in. And people might think, oh, wearing a T-shirt is only a little thing. If it's such a little thing, why do you have to wear it in the game? Before the game? Why are you bothered that I didn't wear it in the pre-match warm-up then? It's a little thing, but it would have gone a long way.
I'm telling you, it's not a little thing. That would have been massive because, Vuj, imagine this. There is no, well, you know, there was no social media. There was nothing. No. Like, we had to sit down. We watched teletext. Yeah. We watched Soccer Saturday, Gillette Soccer Saturday, Jeff Sterling. And then we had Match of the Day. And the most disappointing thing for me now as an older guy watching it from the BBC coverage is the fact that, bro, the most important thing is the football before anything. Why is the first story... Rio Ferdinand not wearing the T-shirt?
Because even
what do you mean?
Even in that situation, though, for you to once again be scapegoated is like, it's twisted.
It's mad.
Like, where's your personal story?
Do you know what I mean?
You're black, and once again, like, to me, it just doesn't like resonate. No, you can't critique a man who's personally, I think, made a decision in his own personal.
Then, like, it goes back to see what's happened with you, like, with Coppa. Yeah. They made a lot of like, they feel they have to make decisions when things like this happen. No, just let this play out sometimes. Like, this is a social issue. This isn't for you to sit there and be the people that the authority on this, because you don't even know how to run this. You're not dealing with it properly. Yeah. So the way you're dealing with it, what makes you the person who can have the authority on what's right and what's wrong if you're not actually making it any better yourselves?
Yeah, no, it's very, very true. There's so much stuff happening right now. I think like the whole judging people about what they've done in the past is ridiculous anyway, as imperfect human beings that we all are. I think when you know someone's overtly a dickhead, overtly a racist or whatever ist you want to put on it, you can deal with that. You know it. But I think when you know any people have done stuff in the past and they come for you, I just think that's just it's a social thing.
But you know Raheem, how he's been brave in what he's done, yeah? And he's done it really well. I just think the football family can learn and take so much from the music industry, because I see all these boys now that are coming out and doing well, in the music industry. I know there's phone calls, bruv, I've got a video, come in a video, please. Or let's do a little link up with this. Or they're all going, yeah, cool, let's do it. They're bringing each other together, and doing stuff, and they've become such a movement that the charts, the mainstream media cannot deal with them. Do you know what I mean? H is just three. He's got three top 10 hits at the moment at one time.
A madman.
Like, who would have ever thought that any little rapper would have been able to do that? Like, but from England. But they're all coming together, and each of them are shouting each other out, boosting them up, so amplifying all what they're doing. But I feel that in the football world, it don't happen. Everyone's so just concerned on what they're doing. Like, how many people? There ain't no movement. with the young footballers now, because they're getting hammered by everyone. Ah, the Cotton Wool generation, they're this, they're that. There's a movement to be had with them that they can help each other and paint a better picture for themselves going forward.
So you're almost saying, like, I guess apart from the t-shirts and organisations who seem to all be in a similar space together, where I've never really felt it's been tackled properly. I don't think you have. I don't think Poet has either. Mm-hmm. Even like, you know, the online campaigns where they put up a photo and it's like, kick out racism.
Get rid of that, man. And you're like, I don't buy that.
No, but it's like, for me, like, because you're serving that to your audience at the end of the day. So that's never going to filter out to the wider, in my opinion, society, who potentially don't like people of different races or are ignorant enough, because I don't really even think these people know what they're doing. Mm. For you to have an opinion or review like that, you just don't know. You have to be ignorant. But anyway, fucking, you're saying potentially moving forward to tackle it, it needs to be a movement of getting players together.
And importantly, people, mixed.
Yeah.
It can't be all races. Just black boys talking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm. Like we were talking before we come on here, but like, little Johnny and Steve in the front room with their dad watching the TV and seeing a black face trying to tell them that racism's wrong, and the dad's a racist going, listen, get that black, this doctor or the other off the TV. Don't know what he's talking. He's on millions. He shouldn't be arguing. He should be happy. He should be thankful he's here playing. Little and Johnny are hearing that from their dad. They're going to think, rah, that's ingrained in them now. But if they've got a face that they see and go, rah, I can, that's my guy, and he's very similar to them in background and culture, and he's going, listen, and one of my teammates got abused racially, and I was devastated, and I had to go and see him, and I couldn't believe it. It affected me. And these guys are telling them stories, and little Johnny and Steve, whatever their names are going, rah, forget what my dad said, because this is my guy. That's who I want to be.
Mm.
There's a more powerful,
I agree,
message I think, to send, yeah. And I just think it needs to be done, because a lot of the stuff you see that come out now, that people were trying to talk to or say, why is there racism, this is how we combat it, it's black people saying that. I get it, that's one part of the argument, but you have to balance that with, there is someone who is of a different culture who gets affected too, but also, where is that racist guy that actually has been a racist or is a racist and tells you why he's like that, tells you how he's like that, why does he think like that, or how did he change and come back round to being actually normal?
It's a deeper issue, anyway.
But it's a social thing, isn't it? But football's a powerful tool to help the change, but it's social. John Barnes is the best I've seen talking on it.
Okay, well, that's like, a controversial a football, one. I think a lot of people criticise him as well.
No, from a football perspective, I like what he says, because he it ain't football. We've been fed all this rubbish for ages. Football's going to change racism. It can't change it. It's education. It's talking to a generation that are a lot younger, and it's got that they have to be educated from an early age. Football ain't gonna do that on its own. Do you know what I mean? But
yeah,
it's a great tool to start to hit people with and to make their a voice for it. But it ain't changing nothing on its own like that.
But then that's why I say,
don't you think Barnes is good? Tell me what you think.
You know what? I haven't consumed much of it.
Neither have I. But from what I have seen,
I've seen him get critiqued quite a bit.
Same here. For me, I think the biggest problem, like I said, I'm always going to say in this is, how can the victims of racism not have a voice?
No, I said they can.
No, not
they
you.
They should.
No, I'm not saying you said anything. I'm saying you're talking about what you said recently.
Okay,
For the victims of racism to not have a voice, then we're not speaking to the people that are affected. If we're not speaking to the people that are affected, then what's the point of it in the first place? You're just speaking to a bag of people that haven't really been through much problems that are like, yeah, that's wrong, and then build a connection based upon a Instagram video or maybe something they've seen from Raheem Sterling. But I'm talking about, you see the people that went to Sunday football like myself and got told you're the best colour team. Like, we're the people that need to be talking about it. You're the person that needs to be talking about it, Rio. The people that have to deal with it. And then we have to educate the places that don't really have much black people, because all of this is ignorance to a certain extent.
But that Sunday team, where's their platform to speak? Is that going to be amplified? The way it's amplified, I think, is using the Raheem Sterlings, using the likes of you guys, to go and tell them stories.
But they need to come to, remember, the thing is, football is such a big place, it needs to feel connected, and the biggest problem is the fact that grassroots is here and then supreme football's all the way up here, whereas in Brazil under 14s can go and watch football for free. So that means grassroots football's here, but then football's kind of growing with it at the same time. So as an under 14-year-old, nothing to do on a Saturday, I can go and watch a bit of football. Whereas over here, we're outpriced so and so forth that racism becomes an issue, because you don't even feel, as a working class boy, regardless of class or anything, even becomes like a social thing, you don't feel a part of football.
Yeah, but that's why now the young kids are going to watch all these YouTube teams.
Trust me, because they feel a part of that.
SC Dons.
Is it Baby Squad? Like all these boys, they've got big followings now.
That's going to shift things, I think. 100%. I think slowly, it's obviously rising to surface now.
My kids watch that.
Yeah,
their games and more their stuff banging. More than they watch professional football sometimes. Like,
banging, I'm glad because they're all about inclusion, they're all about community, they're building things and this. And I can see now back in the day why people go support your local team, because your local team actually has a better feeling than this corporate VAR nonsense that I'm watching on
SC TV. SC Dons are doing more to kick out racism out of football and maybe even in society in general than any of these organisations.
How?
Because they're a team that's predominantly black, from obviously South London. Don's Chapsey's there as well. You can see they're all friends. And sometimes when you watch the games that they're playing at, it's a predominantly white crowd.
So they're not celebrating. Always,
but you're watching the boys and you're going, these are young white boys, potentially watching them in Essex, wherever they might be watching from. They're not going to then go online and start chatting shit or see someone and think shit. They're going to go, these guys are actually sick. And if they're kind of integrating that, as you said, from the bottom, from society starting at a young age, is how you get rid of the bullshit. Because from you go in the BBC and you go, show it the red card. Like, that's done. Mm. After 10 seconds or like the campaign of a month, that's done. But these guys are doing football games on YouTube every week. Mm. And they're not making no overt points, but just for you to visibility see that inclusion and see the crowd respecting them and seeing that these boys are doing something good for themselves. Mm. And they're not from great backgrounds, but they managed to create something out of nothing. I think that's just an extremely powerful thing.
I love it.
Like, that's where the creativity that's coming out right now, I think, on YouTube is so refreshing and so engaging. Mm. I just love seeing it because, as you said, like people are getting top 10s now. Like music, black culture, the music is doing so well. It's beautiful to see. From someone that used to watch it on Link Up TV, Grime Daily, where if you got a million views, I remember when Krypton Conan got a million views, everybody was like, what, a million views?
But you know what?
Now you're hitting 25 mil, 30 mil, so we're hitting bigger audiences.
But you're touching on it there, it's celebrating it. I think we don't celebrate our culture enough, and that's why I said it's great. It'd be great for me to go back to certain places in Tottenham where I've grew up and see a poster of Wretch and see something of Skepta, because all of a sudden, this gentrified area of Costa Coffee's next to Costa Coffee, and then inside Costa Coffee is a Starbucks. This gentrified
for
area
me, that's it,
begins to have a bit of culture, character. Identity, and character.
That identity,
and I think that's really
you have to
important.
Celebrate the icons. I mean, I'd love to see that more. Is celebration of cultural icons and people that have done well from their area.
It doesn't need to be a big thing. It doesn't need to be a big.
But
thing
you know
where
what?
Like,
no, for me, it's like no, make it a big thing.
No,
bro.
It needs to be something embedded in the culture. It needs to be like seeing the police station on the high road, or like seeing the off license on the high road, or seeing the lollipop lady. It needs to be embedded in culture like that, so it's not like, oh my god, it's more like, wow, he's from around here. It's so embedded in you that when a man goes, did you know Rio's from Peckham? Yeah, everyone knows that. Have you seen the poster? Like, it's just normal. That's how I want it.
In my head, I can just see a mural. I would love, even like,
I'm gonna get someone to do it on my own.
But do it, fam.
Bro, why not?
But you know what? Just to go back to the point, like, it's about John Barnes, and I can see, I just thought now the way you lot are going, I don't really check for what he's saying.
Yeah, I don't really.
Is when he called out Jaden, isn't it? Talking about saying he don't understand racism or something like that. If he's not the one feeling the effects of racism, he should go and talk to the kids that are.
Who said that?
That's what you thought about John Barnes. You must have heard.
I didn't hear about that.
No,
So he said something along the lines of, you can get online, something along the lines of like, Jaden, it's easy for Jaden to talk about racism.
Who's Jaden?
Jaden Sancho.
Sancho.
Yeah, it's easy for him to talk about racism. He's a professional footballer. How about the young kids that are receiving racism on a daily basis, haven't got opportunities and jobs and whatnot? I understand that,
John Barnes is very crazy for that. He doesn't know Jadon Sancho's cousin.
No, but what I'm
he
saying...
He doesn't know him, like.
But what he don't need to do... what he don't know is that he don't need... Like, but that just goes against what you're trying to achieve by calling out a young black footballer who's trying. Because, Jadon's young, He's in his own mind, he'll be saying, I'm doing something. I'm standing up for this. I'm speaking out about racism,
Bro,
but and if John Barnes thinks that's wrong, that's fine. Ring him.
You know what
tires
me?
Don't
you know
put
I'm
it
very
on social
of,
media.
And I think I am tired of seeing the young black boy image portrayed negatively.
Yeah, I'm tired. It's boring
now. Like, having grown up around, obviously, Poet and living in Willesden, Acton, I've never encountered more love. Of course... Mm. I don't want to go into negativity. There's enough of the news around that.
Mm.
But I'm just tired of that image.
Like, and you know what I'm tired
and
of?
Fuck all these papers, bro. I'm just tired of. We need to, I don't know. Can it just be? Can I don't know? It's obviously changing. Like Raheem Sterling, I think is shifting it.
Yeah.
But I just said, like, you went through it. Ian Wright went through it. Raheem Sterling went through it. It's a pattern. Like, it's clearly even. It's not even at the bottom. It's even in the institutions. Clearly, they don't even know what they're doing, and they're promoting it in a very, very kind
but,
of.
But
thing.
That's where I think it becomes a movement, though. It's only a movement. It's getting there. It can change it. Like, that's why I look at music now and just think, right, they're doing it so well. Look, you can't. No one can say nothing to Stormzy. No one can say nothing to Giggs. Yeah. They can't say nothing to Skepta because these guys, the foundations of what they're doing is a whole movement underneath. Because if you say something to him, they're going to come out and speak. In the football fraternity, if you're suffering or you're getting hammered by anyone, you're doing it alone. Because no one's coming out and saying anything and trying to protect you because they're thinking, I ain't affecting my situation for you.
Let me show you how dangerous what John Barnes has done, how dangerous it is. And a lot of players do it to, even not even in racism, they just do it. A lot of older players. You need to understand, when you played football, it was like 1970, 1980.
Don't forget though, Barnes was a bad man player.
Barnes was a legend, the goal scorer for England. Of course, he was born in Jamaica, came over, but my thing is this. The times that he was going through racism, I have never heard about John Barnes speaking about racism. He's played in Scotland for Celtic, he's managing Celtic, he's played for Liverpool, he's played for England, representing at a time where being black was very, very difficult. I've never heard him speak about it.
No, Barnes has been an advocate
talking about it. I've never heard him speak about it. I'm not saying he hasn't, I've never heard him speak about it. So this is my problem. Even if you do speak about it, you need to understand that racism and dealing with it in 1980 or 1990s is completely different to the millennial. Mm. So to look at a professional footballer in this day and age, 19-year-old Sancho playing in Germany, and say to him, what do you know? You're a professional footballer. You've eradicated his whole life. Like, all he does is play professional football.
Yeah, I agree,
he comes
I
home,
agree.
He trains in his house, trains in his garden, trains in the shower. Like, it doesn't. It triggered me for the simple fact that I know some of Sancho's family. So I know for a fact Sancho will definitely have a bit of experience of racism in some capacity. Mm. So for you to look at his professional status and say, what do you know? Bro, it happens far too much. A lot of individuals that are in professional worlds have still gone through real life things. We're human beings. So to eradicate that because of someone's profession or social class or money, like, it proper irritates
me. But that's for
me.
The older generation of player to go and help educate the next generation. Like, that, call him, go
like
and
you
see
said,
him,
phone
like,
him
and say, listen, bruv, the way you talk, you spoke there, I think you're a bit off key there. This is how you may want to address it. Do you understand from what I'm saying to you now? And Jaden is someone who want to learn. He'll learn from that. He needs to learn from that. But he's speaking, trying to help a situation. But he's young. He's going to be naive. He's going to make mistakes. Help him, man. No.
At least he's trying the right thing. Yeah. I'm back in
to
Central.
Be speaking at 19, brother, about stuff like that. You're doing well, mate. Because I know a lot of men at 28 weren't doing it.
Yeah. But it seems like the conversations are happening. Obviously, it seems
like
it's...
Yeah, I just think more. I think
there's more highlights on it. I think before, also in England, what I kind of noticed, I don't know if you guys agree, they would... A lot of the media would always point outward. Like, even remember Russia. Obviously, I'm not saying that place is great. They go, oh, it's over there, it's over there. All the bad things are over there. It's no, if you go to, like, over there, it's bad. This thing's happening, and there's people murdering each other over there. But now I feel like it's like people are finally going, like, rah. Look at your own backyard. Mm. Like, in this country, there's so many things that need to be sorted out. And I feel like now it's like slowly coming, like, not slowly, it's very fastly coming to the surface where people are realizing, yo, there's issues here that need to be sorted out and spoken about.
Social media does that as well.
Eradicated on social media as well.
Exposure, everything gets now different to 10, 15, 20 years ago, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can't hide now.
So it's like, it's faster, isn't it? I think things now move faster.
That's why I just think it's so powerful if there's the young players now were to get together and just, like, have open conversations and be very, very, like, they just back each other, man. Because my generation, I think a big thing that was a problem is that there wasn't the platforms in terms of social media to openly be able to back each other. But when shit hits the fans, certain situations, there weren't that togetherness that was portrayed. When there were negative situations a lot of the time or things that were going on, it was like, you guys can deal with that on your own, man. I'm not going to get involved.
Yeah.
You could do that.
Well, one thing I will say, Rio, is like, a big point you touched upon was taking responsibility and celebrating. And I want to celebrate some of the things that you've done, because we could talk about this all day, but there are some things that you've done for me. Like, I'm a Match of the Day fiend, bro. And I've watched a Match of the Day and thought, Rio Ferdinand, what a player. What a player. And I would love to talk about some about that, because you did take responsibility as a centre-back, you did take responsibility as a football player and as a man, and it's full circle. So on the field, I mean, the best duo of Serbian Jamaican obviously is me and Vuj. After you lot, you have Vidic and Rio. Like, bro, what was that like? Because watching it, I can't lie, it was annoying. Bro, dominant, you two were annoying. Force. That is long. If you two are playing, it's long. It's just long.
Apart from Torres here and there ripping them up.
Yeah, Torres went mad on you lot a couple of times.
Not me, bro.
But yeah, it was Vidic.
It was Vidic.
Struggled against
them. You know what? It's mad. I was talking to Vidic yesterday about some stuff. We don't talk every day all the time, but when we do, it's just like, you're just back in sync, man. And that's the in sync is just the word. We're just on the same level, man. It's just, there comes a time, you meet someone and you go on a training pitch and you go on the pitch and it just happens.
Like, that's like me and Poe.
Yeah, exactly. You guys know what I'm talking about. You don't know what I'm chatting about. But it's like, it just kind of just, he knows instinctively where I'm going to go and what suits me, vice versa, the same. And like, I had attributes that I was really strong at. He had things that he was strong at, and they just complemented each other. And I don't know, for a period of time, there was a period of time where I just felt, I did feel kind of invincible, like, and I just thought no one was, I don't know how many players feel like that in their career, where you go, you know what, I know you can't get past me. The security is, if you do, my brethren's there.
Mad.
And if you get past him, Edwin's there anyway. So,
like, you
know what I mean, that's our. But I always just I had a time in my career where I just thought, there's no man that's going to be able to get past me. I don't care. And then I got to a little bit older, and then you got like Messi, and them guys are just like. They're that team, that game, I don't want to go into it, that was demoralising. But again, like going back, when you look at it and you just think, oh, there's no better feeling for a footballer, and you're standing in a tunnel and you've got other players on the other side and they're trying to psych themselves up and shout and scream about their team, but you know there's fear. I can see it in your body language. I can see it in your eyes. You don't want to play against me. I could see it. Or I'm going to give it my best shot today. After the first 5 minutes when I've took the ball off you, or I've run out with a ball and pass it to someone, you're thinking, bloody hell, same old story. I'm going to go out to the left wing or to the right wing and stay well clear of them two.
Was the tunnel kind of like a boxing press conference? Because the most fight, like I said to you, I honestly think any generation watching football now has been deprived of real war.
They needed cameras in the tunnels, man.
Bro, Arsenal versus Tottenham is the best tunnel incident ever in the history of anything. Like, I'm even vexed that I missed a bit of it because I went to the toilet. And my dad, get back here. I've come back in. It's all popped off. Was that a common occurrence in tunnels, or was that just a really...
No, that it was just luck. They got that. It didn't happen all the time. Listen, there's been scuffles against us against Arsenal. Fight in the tunnel.
Serious?
Pizzagate.
That must have been funny, though. Like, when you see pizza on Ferguson's face and Cesc Fabregas has thrown it, that is hilarious to me.
I was walking down a tunnel, you have to remember. I was walking down a tunnel, with Sol.
Where did the pizza even come from?
I don't know. I didn't see that bit, but I was walking down a tunnel and all of a sudden, as you come up the big tunnel, you turn into a little narrow tunnel. About, I could touch both walls like this.
Oh, yeah. We've been there.
So, and then I've got to walk past Arsenal's change room to get to my change room. We're at the other end, about 20 yards away. As me and Sol turn the corner, they're just like, you can see it just starting to go off, simmering, like, and security's in the middle. So I just run, jump through the security, and then come back. And I don't know, I had Loren like that. Everyone was like throwing punches, etc. Security was getting punched up.
Royal Rumble.
And then it just, Royal Rumble, that's what it was. But that was just like, it was funny, to be honest with you. Right? It was mad. I was just thinking, it's like. But then, there loads of times, Robbie Savage got put on the floor one time. Shout out to Robbie Savage, he's my boy. I love him now, but I hated him when I played. This is the thing, I hated Robbie Savage.
He's funny,
when I played, because he had a persona on the pitch, but that what he needed to be like that on the pitch for him to be successful, and he was a successful player. He played Premier League, done really well. But he got me sent off, man. He blemished my whole career, man. I'm only sending off, but he was acting.
Are you serious? Your other sending off should have been against Freddie Ljungberg at Old Trafford. But that's another story. Vuj, I'll show you that. When we lost 2-0 to these lot, Freddie Ljungberg is clean through. He's fouled him and pretended. Everyone's pretended, even though there's like 80,000 people here, that it hasn't happened.
Did I get the ball?
We can watch it now.
Did I get the ball, though?
We can watch
it. I'm only asking, did I get the ball? I can't remember.
No.
Not at all.
Yeah. But whatever you've got, he's got Freddie first. And I'm like, Oh my god! And then we've lost.
There was contact with the ball and with the man. Oh, but Robbie Savage, bruv, funny. He ran past me and just bounced me with his shoulder, bang, you know, like,
yeah,
just in front of the tunnel. And then I just run down the tunnel. The next thing you know, he was just on the floor. But it was just like, the tunnel situations are just like, they were part of it. It was unbelievable. That's Wrighty, mad. I remember Wrighty when he was at West Ham. Reed, come, we're going. Razor, come on. Like, Wrighty was mad like that, like, funny. I remember Lundetvam must have said something, and I just remember there's a picture somewhere. Wrighty's pinching him in his waist. I'm pinching him in his shoulder, like a corner off it, like mad, like. But Wrighty was funny with that type of stuff. Oh, Martin Darlin, brother, you went, yeah, oh,
Darlin,
mate.
The Danish.
You should have asked him about that.
What happened with Darlin?
I don't even know if I can say it.
Is it mental?
But he said, I remember my Martin said something about Wrighty or Wrighty's missus or something like that on the pitch. Like, you know, in school playground, like, your mum jokes weren't on.
No.
From when someone said your mum, it was game on, innit?
Yeah, yeah. It's long.
And it was that type of thing. I remember looking at Wrighty and Wrighty's head had gone.
And Darlin was a bit big as well. Yeah. Was it Blackburn at the time, right?
Yeah, yeah. Blackburn, and Wrighty's head was gone. I remember in change room, the manager talking, Wrighty was just getting dressed quick. Reed, come on, we're going to the bar. Who's coming? Because in them times, in the bar, that's where everyone congregated.
Players' lounge.
Yeah, players' lounge. And we was away.
Lit.
Went up there. Wrighty says, I'm waiting. What's wrong? So I'm waiting. Can't have that. Wrighty. So we ordered a couple of drinks, waiting. And then, obviously, Darlin come in with his entourage. Wrighty just put it on him, boy. Come outside. Come on.
Do you know what's so funny about Ian Wright? Imagine.
But Wrighty, there was Razor. Like, there was some big dogs in there. Razor's, I was like a little scrawny 18-year-old, like, standing there going, thinking, right, if it goes off, got a couple of big men with us, it'll be all right. But
Razor,
Radog. West Ham looked decent this season as well. Not too
bad. Yeah, I watched them against City the first day, the game, they got destroyed. But completely. You could see something. The new signing, Haller looks decent.
What about United struggling now, though? Obviously, you come from a golden generation. For you to be seeing what you're seeing now,
look how happy my man is.
So am I. For you to be seeing United at this level, tell me, is it pain? Hashtag.
Yeah, it's a pain, because, like, and the killer is I'm on TV having to talk about this.
How do you, it seems like, so you're hiding your emotions.
My timing couldn't have been any worse.
Yeah, because Gary Neville's not having it. He's all over the shop.
He's the
counselling.
Why,
he's counselling levels right now.
Yeah,
BT are winning 11-8. Because of Gary Neville a lot and Graham Souness.
Why?
There's a scoreboard that me and Twitter are keeping for performances of BT and Sky, and BT are winning 11-8 right now. It might be 12-8.
Why?
Because Jamie Redd, because every time that they do something silly, I give a goal to the opposition.
Oh, okay.
So now it's 12-8. The reason why it became 12-8 is because Jamie Redknapp, he put on the television and goes, all right, so here's a corner flag, and then circled the corner flag. And I just thought to myself, I have it saved. I just thought to myself, well, if we watch football, we should know what the corner flag looks like. Yeah, and on top of that, the corner flag's in the middle of the screen. So it's like, all right, first of all, there's the corner flag. I said, nah, 1 point to over there to BT.
But it's hard, man, because, like, I know a lot of the guys that are still there, a lot of the staff.
Shout out, Jamie.
And you've got to be like, I can't lie. I've got to say what I see. But I don't want to kill people. It's like, and that's not just at Man United. I have to remember what it was like when I played as well. And I will say, if a situation, a player could have done better, I'll say it 100%. If that's a mistake, it's a mistake. I'm not going to sit here and try and dress it up, whether it's United or anyone, or if I know you like Pogba. If I think he's made a mistake, I'll say it. But it's just hard at Man United, just watching the way it's gone. It's only been like 7-8 years. And you're just thinking, wow, the decline from where it was to where it is now is very hard to kind of sit there and critique. But you have to do it. It's part of my job.
Obviously, it was Sir Alex. That's the trickle-down effect since he's left. It's just been like a Titanic, hasn't it?
The man. Like, and you can't even blame David Moyes. The job was so difficult to come into.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a difficult... Them shoes are too big to fill. Like, so... And the problem is, he made some mistakes. He'd probably tell you that himself now. And you just think, wow, there's no recovery, because people are going... The sharp, like, decline was like, whoa, can't have this, panic stations, boom, gone. Moyes is gone. Yeah. Bring someone else in. And after that, Louis van Gaal and Mourinho, two of the most experienced managers that you could have found in the game at that point, they surplus to requirements, gone. So it shows you the job was very difficult. It shows you that, I don't know, it's obviously the management, but also the people that run the club as well. Everyone, the blame has to be shared.
How difficult... Do you know what? I always speak about it with Vuj, and I speak about it with Wrighty quite a bit nowadays. Is I said it in the last podcast that people sometimes, because a person has 87 shooting on FIFA, you watch him in real life under any circumstances, you must always have 87 shooting. You can't miss an opportunity, because when I play you in FIFA, you always score. If I do Football Manager, you always play well. I'm asking you, how difficult is it emotionally to be a footballer? Because I know at work, sometimes I can honestly say to you at Coppa 90, bro, in the past year, the last year of Coppa 90, that wasn't the best performance, that wasn't the best version of Poet that I would like to see. So if anyone critiques my performance, I can hold up my hand and say, I apologise, I understand why you said that. But due to my life at that present moment in time, everything I'd done became quite difficult. I probably wasn't the best father I could be. I probably wasn't the best friend, wasn't the best brother. Fortunately for me, I can say this here and everyone will have an understanding. Cool. Footballers have to remain quiet for so long, and then I hear afterwards so many stories and I'm like, you mean you were going through that and then kicking football at 3 o'clock and everyone just expected you to just perform great because you have 87 shooting? Like, how difficult is it day to day mentally to deal with all the pressures and then go and play a football game?
Yeah, it is difficult, but again, that's the job you're in. Like, every job throws up difficult obstacles.
Okay.
So whether you're a lorry driver, it's going to be difficult at times and it's going to be hard, and you're going to have to get through it. Football, people just expect you to be able to deliver and do it and suffer everything because the money you're getting paid. So the money really downplays everything else. You should be able to deal with that. If you're on signs, so everyone's comment is, if I was 100 grand a week, yes, I'd take anything.
Yes. Yeah, but it's not but the case like when
that.
You're there.
But it ain't boy. Like that. Yeah, exactly. So they take away the human element of it. Everyone's a human at the end of the day. As much as you boot up to be a superstar and like this mega man because you're a footballer, you strip it back, you're just a human like anyone else. So, but you don't get afforded the time and the allowance to have mistakes, etc., because you're on that money. But it is difficult. But listen, man, I'm retired now and I wouldn't change it for the world, man. I'd do football again and again and again because it's the best life, man. I got to places I never even dreamed of. Like, my passport was... I've had enough passports because I travelled everywhere. Like, and I saw places, I've done things, I've been able to do more things in life than I could ever have imagined. And I've done, every day I woke up, yeah? Imagine this. I woke up bouncing into training because I was doing something I loved. How many people on this planet can actually sit there and go, you know what, I wake up every morning thinking, thank you, I'm doing something I love. It ain't most people's job is a chore.
Mashallah.
So, like, I see it as being lucky. So when I see some players going, oh, this is so to be a footballer, bro, is it really? Like, considering what else is going on out there.
They don't love it enough then, potentially, with that mentality.
That makes me feel they're the people that get into football for the wrong reasons. Like, I got into football, I would have played football for nothing anyway, but I was just lucky that this industry paid really well, so I was happy and lucky in that sense. But I played football because we didn't have social media and all these platforms to see what football brings you. I didn't know what John Barnes was driving. I didn't care. I didn't know what holidays he was going on and where what he was doing, how much he travelled in the off-season. I didn't know. We couldn't see that. I wanted to know what he was doing training, really. I wanted to know what Tahari was eating. I wanted to know, right, how did that game make you feel? What type of training did you do to be able to bend the ball over the wall like that? That's what I wanted to know, and that's what I used to go out and work on. And I used to try and find any little VHS video that I could find that would give me a little insight into what they do. Well, but I wanted to play because of football. Football, that was it. Yeah. So it's so much more pure. Unfortunately, the kids now get to see so much more, and a lot of people play football for what it can bring you. And sometimes a lot of the kids are playing football because their parents see them as a lottery ticket.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If my kid makes it, I make it. We make it together. I'm going to be bathing in some nice cash. So it's a different environment, different time now, man. But the pressures are there. Listen, you got to get yourself up on a, like, play Saturday, get yourself ready for the game. Win, lose or draw. Got a game in the Champions League on Tuesday. Well, you got a game in a couple, whatever, on Tuesday, or a league game Tuesday. So you ain't really going to go out clubbing or nothing like that. Sit in your house, digest the game, think about it, whatever your mistakes or whatever you've done well. Go into training, prepare for Tuesday, play Tuesday, get up again for Tuesday. On your way down, bring yourself down on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of training, obviously all them days. get yourself up again on Saturday. It's just a roller coaster because you're winning and losing. How you deal with the ups and downs as well. Like, them type of things is hard. And to stay focused for a season. The teams that win the league are the ones that remain focused throughout. That's hard. But it's not doable. It's just hard to do that because you've got to set your mind up the right way to be mentally and physically in it every day. And they're the best team. That's why my team was the way it was, because there was a relentlessness, like, every day. And it's mad. We got a group of a load of us who chat on the WhatsApp and that, who played at United over the years. It's about 15, 20 of us in there.
Is Wes Brown in there?
Yeah, he's in there.
Legend.
Yeah, but it's like we chat in there.
Overtime?
No, he's not in there, no. Legend. But we talk in there, yeah? And it's like...
The last one, Roy Keane.
Who?
Roy Keane.
No, Roy.
Delete the group.
He ain't got WhatsApp, I don't think. But, but you see what it is? The mad thing is with that is when people shout out and go, oh, what about when we used to do that? We used to have a game called SOCOM. It's like an old school type of Call of Duty.
Mm.
Teams. 6 versus 6. So 12 of the 22, 24-man squad that are travelling about.
Bin man doing his bits.
So 12 of the 24-man that was in the squad when we were travelling anywhere or in hotels were playing this game with us. Right? 6v6. If we didn't have enough players, 4v4. That game was the most intense game. And whoever won that would go nuts. So I remember Fergie say, shut up, what's wrong with you lot? Calm down. You're on the bloody bus or on the train. Calm down. We said, no notice taken, bro. Just, what? Get me up. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Going, this is for about 3-4 years in our most successful period. Champions League, back-to-back winning league titles. SOCOM was pivotal.
Because just trying to have a good
it
time.
Showed you team. Yeah. So I knew... From just playing that game, yeah, I knew, and I worked out, he's selfish. He's a proper team player. I'm not in the game, and it started to relate to the game. Them attributes, them traits, I see in football.
Aye, aye, aye.
And I used to judge people sometimes through that game.
Mm,
and it was 99.9% of the time, right, he's selfish.
That's crazy,
but that
bro.
Game created a mad coming together of the team. Telling you, like,
so that played a big part as well. Massive, apart from obviously the magic massive. In the team and
so when people talk about, oh, let's do a team bonding thing, sometimes something simple like that brings a team to united together.
Can you get that? Because I've got a couple of men at Arsenal I'll give that to, you know, like that. Because we can profit from some bonding.
Yeah,
I think that. Is there too much ego in the game now? You reckon ego and distraction? What do you view about the whole social media thing of your team isn't doing well, but you're on social media? Like, how do you view that? Because I feel like you're not on it because you're a professional.
Like, I just look at it, yeah, how
if you
I
were
would
a manager.
Have done it, yeah? No, yeah. How I would have done it. Say, in fact, for instance, me, if I did, when social media just come in the game, innit?
Yeah, I remember.
When I was on the way on the last few years of my career, but if we didn't win on a Saturday, you wouldn't really see me on social media. You definitely wouldn't see me at a photo shoot. Like, I walked out at Nike, talked to the people that run Nike when I was there. If we had lost a game on a Tuesday in Champions League or Wednesday and had a photo shoot the next day, I weren't there. Or I didn't play well, not coming. I used to meet my management, New Era, mostly on a Thursday or Wednesday. They'd come up to London, from London to Manchester. Ask them how many times they had to go back down because I didn't come out my bedroom or my room in my house. No, you can't come in. I don't want to talk to no one. Don't do it. To talk about strategy moving forward or talk about commercial deals or to have an interview for Sanso. I'm not doing it. Because I didn't want to be seen. I'd be embarrassed. What do you mean? I don't want people to see me doing all this stuff, yeah, after I've just lost a game or I haven't played that well. I used to be embarrassed. My pride was mashed up. Yeah, walking to the school and I've got a kid going, oh, I support Man City, we beat you. I wanted to put him in the bush. But, and then I look at it now, does it mean that because some of these guys, their filter or their presence on social media doesn't change regardless of the result. Doesn't change. The result could be negative or positive. You're going to see them consistently the same way on social media. Does that mean they care less than what I did? That's what I struggled with at the beginning. But through speaking to the likes of Pogba, Jesse, knowing them, other kids that I've seen on social media, I know they love football. They love it. They live and breathe football. But they're being judged because of their social media presence. I done it at the beginning as well. I've come to understand it a lot better now. That, and their personalities might be different. These guys, some of these new generation might not be people that get down too much. Mm-hmm. Don't get too high and don't get too down. I used to go down into the doldrums sometimes and think, wow, this the worst day of my life just now. We just got beat by Sanso. We might not win the league now because of that. Gee, well, go and do a commercial. No chance. No, I'm not going. But people just deal with situations differently and they're getting judged for it.
Mm.
It's a new generation, different, man.
The thing is, though, because it's like, I definitely all am up for like not trying to kill someone because of their social media presence. I think it's a little bit...
Sorry to cut you. Sorry. Yeah. The key is perception.
Yeah.
Perception is king in this situation because, say, for instance, this is an A-list player, best player in the league or whatever, and they get beat Saturday. Should he really be on social media? In him and himself, I don't care. I am what I am. This is me. I'm happy all the time. Win or lose, but I'm going to be the same. It's a great message in your own head, but there's other people that are going to judge you and it's going to create pressure on you and your teammates. So you might have to act a little bit differently. So portray a
that
different...
That is what I was going to come
so
across.
So portray a different image. Maybe,
I can't lie.
Like LeBron James.
That's what
LeBron James, come playoff time, tweets... social media's on shutdown.
But I think that's really important.
That sends a message of professionalism.
Yeah, bro.
I care. It's perception.
Yeah, perception and timing, and I wouldn't like it.
And do you know why though? Because it's like, for me,
well, I who can does see, it that you don't like them?
Who does it? No, I don't mind anyone doing it. I don't. I'm not really that invested anymore in anyone
I think,
doing
no,
it.
The,
I'm not interested.
The,
but if I was heavily invested, and I mean like management or something like that, I would have a problem because it's like we need to all here be on the same page. We're not playing well right now. So now we need to take a look at what the hell is going on in order for us to get to this point. And this is not pointed at any one individual because like I said, when Lacazette and Aubameyang were doing it, Arsenal fans were on them. I didn't really care because I was like, I don't think that is the sole reason that we're... I don't even think that's a contributing factor to us doing poor because there was a part we were doing really well and they were doing that. So, but over the course of time, I'm talking years now, if things are not going well, I think everybody... a part of a situation has to look at their contribution to the downfall of something. And I think if that is potentially a downfall, like you said, if me doing my social media thing now is an issue because X, Y, and Z is pissed off, which is having a result in this particular manner, I'll stop doing it.
One thing it does bring is pressure.
Better pressure.
So if that brings pressure, the best players, the best leaders are here to alleviate pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So bringing it by doing X, and you know you're doing X by doing X, Y, and Z, you've got to cool it down a little bit. But I don't get, listen, if I was a manager at a football club now, I'm telling you right now, I'm doing everything within my powers to shut down all social media on certain days. Day after a game, win, lose, or draw, we ain't posting. I don't want it. The 24 hours maybe before, I don't know, I would devise something where you always in your contract in the small print somewhere, social media gets switched off on this day, and if you don't, you're getting fined. You ain't come or don't come to this football club because I ain't having it, because I ain't having nothing that comes in that brings more pressure to me. I'm getting asked questions about it in my press conferences.
It's all
I want to hear about football, not talk about someone's social media. That's the way I would run it, but that's up to the clubs if they're going to do that. Some clubs, I think, feel they ain't got the power to do that. Listen, you're at my football club, you're listening to what I'm saying, because I'll tell you what, if you don't, you're on the bench. Go and watch in the stands and look what it looks like to be a player at my club. About your more worried about your social media. Come on, man. I would not have it. But I'm not in management.
Bring back Fergie. Reasons. Bring back Fergie. Donnie wouldn't have any... Like I said, social
do you reckon
media
players wouldn't come to your club because you're saying, listen, on these days, you don't post?
No, they'd still come.
Nah, they'd still come. That's if you're a successful club,
they'll come.
Give a damn.
Yeah.
And you're paying them the peas, they're going to come.
For me, it's not even like day. I don't think I care about days. I'm just like times. Like,
but that ain't even a big thing, though, Poet.
It's not a big thing.
It's not a big thing, but you know what it is? These little things are percentages. They add up.
But that's what I'm saying. See,
the small details count, man.
In certain times... I think it's just about what's appropriate for the time. Like me, if I'm playing for a team and we're playing badly, the last thing I'm doing is go on social media. Like that's just, I've really got to get my head right. What's going on? Why am I a part of this situation? How are we going to make it better collectively? I'll tell you what, us sharing our energy over there and not over here. Let's take a look at what some of the past teams done. Oh, right. So that's what they were doing. Well, I want to be like the past teams. We've got to try and take some aspects of that as well. Mm. And I don't think there's that. I think there's this... social media is rubbish, and then it's like the players are kind of rebellious because they want to do their own thing. And then that's their one part where they're quite rebellious, rather than saying to them, we've got no problem with you doing this.
It's what you put up. It's the content. It's when it's put up.
There is timing. I think there is a... Yeah. You can gauge it.
I'm all
well.
For social media. I can't sit here and hammer social media. I was one of the first, if not the first, footballers to get on Twitter. I was bang on it. So I can't sit here and say, oh, it's a bad thing. I'm a admin, like, I remember Giggsy and Gary Neville going, what's all this Twitter? But what are you doing? Nev,
look at Gary now.
He's on it more than me now. He understands it.
Gary loves it.
Loves arguing.
A lot of people are sceptical, but you just evolve with it and just evolve and evolve. But I got fined. I was a scapegoat for a lot of this. Yeah. I got fined mad money for like certain tweets and stuff like that at the time because I was working it out, learning on the job.
Hmm.
But
as soon as the corporates come in.
Yeah, responsibility has to come in. Yeah, exactly.
So, Fizz.
Okay, no. Now, you know what? I need to wee you real quick.
Go on then. There's no rules.
Yeah, come on.
Man, it's Karen talking to Rhea while she got toilet.
Yeah, that'd be
okay. Wicked. Wicked, wicked, wicked. Do you know one thing I need to ask you? Because again,
go on.
I don't know how long you've got anyway. It's 12:22 now.
Wait, how long have you been? How long have you been going
for? An hour and a bit.
Over whatever now.
I'm alright, whatever.
You know what? This is an idea. I know this is the best thing to do.
Yeah.
We pause, we get food.
Yeah, and come back.
And maybe carry on for a bit.
Yeah, we can. Well,
I thought it's just an idea. But
yeah, go on. I'm hungry.
Let's get a little bit. Yeah.
Sweet. We're back in, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
I went for a wee. We've ordered the food.
Yes.
Now weighing it through the window. That's going to become a staple.
It's lit, isn't it? And you never know when in the shot it's going to happen. But it's going to happen at some point.
That's how I used to get food in Manchester, you know.
Is it?
I used to go to some place in Moss Side to get my hair cut. And I said to the bar, listen, where do you get some food around here? He said, there's a shop next door or there's the best ones in some house. So I went there, little back street. I ordered the food when I was in the barber shop. Went there a couple of minutes around the corner. Knocked the door, and the food just come through the letterbox, boy.
That is lit.
Like,
what food was it?
It was like the Caribbean food, like. No, so then put five or whatever it was. Take the food, exchange. It was mad. And then after he got to know me, he said, get me come and sit in the kitchen and that. But where, for the first month or two, the exchange was through the letterbox. That was it.
That's gangster.
Absolute madness. We're talking about Roy Keane, though.
From food to Roy Keane. Like that. Used to eat people, bro.
You did, didn't it?
That's my idol.
Special was that man. And you were talking about who dared to stand up to Roy Keane. Did you have any altercations?
Yeah, I had a couple of arguments with him.
I knew you would stand up to him, but I want to know who else.
Nicky Butt. Nicky Butt had an argument with him in America one time.
See, Nicky Butt had a fight with David Batty.
We're having pre-season arguments. Ross.
Who else?
How can Butt and
argument? Just like a little, like little bite back. Do you know what I mean? But like, who else? He had some people shook though in that change room. I know that. I'm not even going to embarrass a few people. But I know who was shook.
I know John O'Shea was shook.
No.
I know Fletcher might have been shook.
No, Shady and Fletch were like his like little, they were like his little brothers. He'd treat them like his little
guys.
Oh,
is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's lit then.
And they loved him. Look up, Shady's Irish, obvious.
Full thing, look up
Fletch is a midfielder, desperate to be a player.
Must look up to Roy Keane.
Word, yeah. Like, and to be fair, Roy, as bad as people will talk about him and his image and that, but one thing I tell you was he was a great leader, and that he actually, because the standards he demanded on a daily basis in the change room, like he pulled the change room together one time meeting, like I don't see enough people doing extras. People come in, get on their phones, go home. Where's the extra working on your game and on the training pitch? Where's the extra going in the gym?
Is that what you heard?
Yeah, he was on so that. When certain people's going like. I was alright because I always had extras, but I know certain people's in there like, right, talking like me. Oh my God, I hope you don't look at me. Oh, some people like that, like, yeah, people moving shook. Like, but he was like.
Jonathan Greening.
He weren't there when I was there, but he might have been one, but yeah. I ain't going to name names, I won't embarrass people, but there's some big people that you wouldn't imagine that would have been. That I know that their heart rate used to go up.
Van Nistelrooy.
No. Rude was a top guy, Rude.
Come on.
But it was like, oh, but the thing is, there was always arguments sometimes. It was easy. Do you know what they did? Back then, it was okay to fight and argue. It was okay to ruffle feathers. It was okay to point the finger at people and then remain friends after, because it was all for the good of winning.
Yeah.
It weren't no ego business. It weren't because of me, because I want to be the top guy or anything. It was because for the betterment of my team, I'm going to tell you. That's the way it was.
Got you.
So I just hope that that's there today in the dressing rooms, that people just ain't. That's why I liked what I see with Mane the other day with Salah.
I love that.
Whether he's right or wrong, yeah.
He didn't care.
He didn't care because he's thinking about, I want the team. I want the team to win. I want the team to prosper. And he put everything aside, don't care about our friendship and how we're part of the three amigos or whatever. Pass me the ball, man.
I think he was very right. I think that was so good to see.
I don't care if he was right. I just love seeing it. And that's what I was talking to a couple of the boys the other day. I'm just, that means, that's, that for me is a sometimes more than a result. That's more than a goal, a tackle. Just seeing that and knowing that that's in that change room from a Man United perspective, that ain't good. Because that's that's something you need in a change room.
Do you know what's so funny? So you want to say something? It's so funny that you say about the Roy Keane thing, because instantly, do you know, I started thinking of it, like, who in that changing room pulls everyone aside and says, boys, we are actually acting up. Like, we've got a team of, Man United's got a very talented team.
What, now who does it?
Who
probably,
does it?
Probably James right now, if anyone.
Daniel James.
Which is mad, everyone. But
he's a
I can't really see anyone there. That,
yeah, but that's what we've been talking about on BT for a while now, like, when you talk about teams, like, who's the leader? Like at Man United, no one really stands out not as being all. Or
not even has, Pogba. I've or seen has,
Pogba's a leader, I think. He's got it in him. Yeah. We saw with France. You saw
yeah,
that.
He's a leader, man.
But you need players that you can are willing to come together. You need players that I think the Man United dressing has been far too confused for a long time about philosophy, about management, about direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's made it more difficult for someone like Pogba to bring that dressing room together, maybe.
He lost a lot of characters as well this summer.
Yeah, but like, I don't know, there ain't been that person or that anyone at the moment where I've seen who's going to, you can direct go. And sometimes it's not about one. Man United, in my team, it weren't just about one person leading. If I had the armband, it wasn't just about me. Nemanja led in his own way. Giggsy led in his own way. Gary Neville led in his own way. Do you know what I mean? It's like, there's different people that lead. Yeah,
yeah.
Within it, you need lieutenants sometimes in that dressing room, more than just one man speaking. So you can't be afraid to make put someone's nose out of joint. You can't be afraid to go, oi, you better fix up because you're going to mess up my chances of winning. So calm down what you're doing, or sort out what you're doing so we can go on and win. Now, is that happening now? Like, well, I look at Liverpool, Robertson's performances, the way his intensity is a form of leadership.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sets the tone. Jordan Henderson. Like,
legend.
The way he, like, people were calling him out, he ain't good enough, he's not this, he's not that. He might not have the technical ability of a lot of players, but the intensity with which he plays sets the tones that other players have to be up there with that intensity. Like James Milner.
Oh,
do you know what I mean?
Legends.
And that's a core of British players.
Yeah.
That's within
that
team that do set a tone sometimes. Do you know what I mean? So, forget sometimes all of the frills and the skills and whatnot. Without that other side, you can't be successful. And I'm sure them three guys are guys that will talk and shout at people in that change room.
Hendo definitely.
Does it hurt you seeing them?
Oh, bruv, it's murder.
It's murder.
Because none of my mates are like Liverpool fans. And I like Liverpool when I was younger because of Barnes. Like, I didn't really support a team properly, but I liked Barnes, so I watched a lot of Liverpool.
Yeah,
but all my mates were Liverpool, man. Liverpool, Arsenal, and bloody hell. Like, Arsenal ain't a threat, so it's cool. But Liverpool, but Arsenal, Liverpool, what they're doing now, it just looks.
I think this season
menacing, bruv.
Is this is the season? I reckon.
I think City will win the league still
again.
Yeah, there's only, like, they're gonna, it's three in a row. That's the incentive for them. We done it. They're gonna want to match what someone else done. That's something to aim at, isn't it? I didn't want to put that in there, the three in a row, but it's what we've done.
Yeah, that's lit though. You've done, like, Man United done bits.
I swear that the last five in a row, that was with, like, Owen in the team. And was that team when Fergie was on the way out? Overtime when he scored that goal against.
Yeah, it might have been, yeah. But Fergie, we won it then, and someone else won it, then Fergie won it when his last year.
That's it, yeah, like last year.
Because I think it was like 2000.
That team wasn't even that good, the last team.
I know people say that, yeah. Like, the team that last, Fergie's last team that won it, yeah.
What, 2013?
We won it by about 8 points, won the league.
That's
they weren't
what I'm
that
saying.
Good.
But that's the testament of Fergie.
Fergie just had something in him.
Yeah, that showed me the management is massive. Plays a massive part. Because we thought, yeah, leave it out, bro. But we thought, you know, when you're in that, yeah, you're in that bubble. Just imagine, yeah, you're in the bubble and everyone's talking, Fergie's a god, Fergie's this, and we're all the same, we're behind him, do anything for him as the manager. But a part of you sits there and goes, it ain't just him though, it's us as well. We got some ego, some pride, like it is us as well. Are we getting the kind of shout that we, it's more spread than just, oh, it's just Fergie. I didn't realise how much is driven by a manager and the influence a manager can have until he left. When he left, in the months that started gathering after that, that I was at Man United, and you could see there was a bit of, there's a big difference. I started going, I remember me and Emmanuel Vidic used to have steam room, we used to go in the steam room a lot after training, and we'd have like 30-minute, 20-minute intense conversations about all this type of stuff. And we used to always say, is he really a genius or is he just lucky? But in the months after he left, it was like, right, he's a genius. Isn't it? This guy was too good, man. He could smell it. He could smell it. It was just different. He could come in and he'd make decisions with the team, and we'd sit there and go, see that? What is he doing? How's he playing? He's brought him out, and all of a sudden my man would go and score or set up a goal and have an unbelievable performance. But he used to just act off instinct sometimes. I think he just woke up sometimes and think, you know what? I'm going to play Darren Gibson against Bayern Munich.
He's a madman. Like, he played six defenders against Arsenal.
Like, different talk, like, and Arsenal, so basic. People think it's so intricate, this management business, and it's got to be like, there's only one Guardiola who makes football sound like poetry and make it sound like it's algebra at the same time, yeah? But he sees it so clear and no one else can see it as clear as him, yeah?
Yeah.
But Fergie, some would strip it back against Arsenal in them days when it used to go off. You go and outrun, you outbattle, you take over the game physically, boot these around the park, and then let you do your football too, do your talking after.
Mm.
That's Sunday football talk. That ain't like Premier League, Championship winning, European Championship winning team talk. That's stripping it back and saying, outwork these boys. They don't want it when you're in their face. Darren Fletcher, get up against them and let them see you straight from minute one to minute 90. That's how you win this game against them. No intricate business about, oh, overlaps, underlaps, high block, low block business. It weren't none of that. Sometimes it's just understanding your opponent sometimes and just going, you don't need to do all this. You can beat them by doing this. And he was like, he used to, and that was a different game plan to playing against, I don't know, against Liverpool sometimes, or playing against Bolton away, or like he changed it all the time.
So Fergie, you'd say, so he was, instinct was very special about him.
Mm.
It was the almost basic tactics at times, nothing too crazy. And we'd speaking about, you know, social media, superstars, the game's changing. You do remember also at the Beckham thing, when Cristiano Ronaldo came as well, there was always, I feel like, a bit of a competition between him and the players, where he's saying, you can't be really a superstar here and stand out too much. Is that true, would you say?
No, he liked that, Bellingham. But if he didn't want you to be too big for your boots or think you was bigger than anything else.
Okay, there you go.
And he might have fought that with Bex towards the end. Are you listening to me? Are you taking on everything I'm telling you? Are you trying to be more of an individual than I need you to be for my team? They're the questions I think he probably had. And he didn't get the answers in his own mind that he wanted. So, right, therefore, bye-bye. Same thing with Roy Keane. He thought he'd gone too far beyond in terms of maybe his discipline or whatever that he was putting out there, and he didn't act the way he wanted him to act. And Yap he was Stam. Coming to the end. Yeah, and Yap Stam. So he made quick decisions, things like that. But Cristiano, the difference was he was on his way up. All them guys you just mentioned are people in the middle of their careers are coming towards the end. So Cristiano was on his way up. He was grooming him. And he was almost like a pet project in that he came as a huge potential, and by the time he was looking to leave, he was the best player in the world. So I've been a part of that.
What was that game like where you said, sign that boy?
Sporting Lisbon, away. I'll never forget it.
What was it like?
I remember about three or four of us were going toilet boy at half time. I looked at Shazy, he was marking him, couldn't breathe. He needed an oxygen tank, Shazy, in a bad way. I was laughing. I was in the toilet laughing, going to the toilet. And about four of us were going, wow. That boy's unbelievable, isn't it?
What was he doing? Sign him.
He was just doing mad tricks. He was opening of a stadium. Like, it was opening of their new stadium, but he was just bamboozling people with tricks. Like, I was like, well, stay on the wing. Don't come inside, please. And it was like, Shazy, get hold of him. Come on, man. What's wrong with you? Like, mad. And then, bearing in mind, we'd missed out on signing Ronaldinho that summer.
I remember.
And I was pissed. I was thinking,
did he really come
to... Ronaldinho, no, he didn't come to training, I don't think. But it was like, Ronaldinho, gaffer. Every morning I was like, Matt, have you signed him, us? Have we got him? Come on. I don't know, son. I'm not sure, son. Gaffer, please, have you got it or not? What's going on? What's it going to take? Is it money or what? Come on, just pay whatever he needs. Not sure, son, not sure. We ain't got him. Not going to get him. Heartbreak, bruv. I was like, oh my God, deflation. Like, wow, what are we going to do, man?
Oh, Ronaldinho United would have been...
Mad. Bro, Iron Robin.
And then Iron Robin as well. He comes to the training ground. I saw him at the training ground.
You saw Robin at the training ground? Like,
didn't turn up. Then he goes to Chelsea and smashes it. Becomes whatever he was an unbelievable player.
What other players did you see at training ground?
But Cristiano... But we didn't need a training. We played that game, yeah?
Yeah.
After the game, everyone's going, boss, got to get him. What a player, got to get him. We was on the coach. All of a sudden, half an hour. Come, what's going on? Not moving. It's outside the stadium. And then all of a sudden, Chinese Whispers comes back. Now they're in the boardroom trying to sign the kid, that Ronaldo.
Did they scout him before?
They'd known about him. He weren't like an unknown quantity, but the extent of how good he was wasn't... That it was clear to see this is potential the best in the world.
So basically, if you lot didn't play that game, Arsenal would have signed Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah.
I'm fuming. Yeah. I am so angry.
We wouldn't have gone so hard to get him.
So you lot could have had him.
Yes.
Yeah, but he would have flopped there.
Not under Arsene Wenger. Are you mad?
So Cristiano was on his way to Arsenal potentially.
Yeah.
And you lot played a friendly.
Yeah, to open the stadium. Obviously, they wanted a big club to come and open the stadium, so they called Man United. And then we went there and he tore it up. It's like
a friendly as well. That's the maddest thing.
I'm fuming, bro.
He was bad. But like, so that's what I mean. So like, Fergie, he was like a project for Fergie. Like, he, Carlos Queiroz, they just groomed him, man. And without his own self, pride and determination and desire to improve and become better, it wouldn't have happened what happened, but he needed the likes of Fergie and Carlos as well and the team to push him.
Jesus.
But that's crazy. Yeah, so you guys are waiting on the coach
and
it was because the management was trying to sign Cristiano.
Yeah,
I rate that's, you know what,
mad.
One of the, is this true as well? I'm obsessed with certain football stories and obsessed with Ferguson, that he started making plans to win the league after you won 1-0 against Sunderland and lost it in the last minute against Aguero. I heard he was on the coach.
No. In the change room, mate.
Change
room. What? So that change room, yeah, that was one of the... It's another time when you just go, this guy's different, man. Like, just imagine, I'm on the pitch here. Yeah? Our final whistle goes, we've won the league. A whole season. And the whistle goes... And you look at the bench, have we won? What's the score? Yeah, it ain't finished there yet, but we're... All of a sudden, their fans go nuts at Sunderland. At the stadium are like, oh, my God. You realise, obviously, City must have scored. That feeling, man.
I
can't even put that into words and to let you understand how that feels. Deflation is like, whoa. You walk in a change room. And that's the time we had Phil Jones, Smalling, a few other younger players coming into the squad. I think Fletch was one of Welbeck, Cleves, etc.
Was that the season you beat us 8-2?
Yeah, I think might have been.
It was.
And I remember we all sat down, everyone slumped, quiet, could have heard a pin drop. And then Fergie comes in and just goes, right, get your heads up, look at me now. Look at him, you're thinking, right. And he's like, listen, you young players, all I want you to do now is just remember their fans in that stadium laughing at you. Not even their team. Not even celebrating their own team or clapping their own team. They're celebrating you losing. Just think of that. And in pre-season, you use that as your fuel for next season to come back and win this league. And you older ones, you help these boys get your arms around them and make sure they're all right and they're not too low after this. Get dressed and have a good summer.
What a fucking G, man.
I was low, but I couldn't wait to come back in. I started my pre-season early on my own, go back in, you're like raring to go, like, and I don't know, man. It's just like sometimes the words are important, but the tone with which he addresses the team as well is so important, man. Like, he just managed to do that countless times where he would talk about stuff that had nothing to do with football. Nothing to do with any football at all. He bought, remember the Chilean miners that were underground for about a few months?
I think I know something about
look it up. They almost, they got trapped underground, yeah?
Oh, the Chilean miners.
Yeah, I thought you'd know that.
They got trapped underground. For, they started thinking about eating each other and stuff like that to survive. And a real team effort to get themselves out of it. We were sitting on the bikes one time in the change in the, before training in the gym. And we used to look at a big screen. And all of a sudden, these guys started walking in, man, lining up in front of us. Who's these guys, man? What's this? Fergie comes in and says, do you know who these guys are? No, these are the guys that were trapped underground from Chile.
No way, you're taking this.
Ferguson brought the Chilean miners.
Bruv, I was this like,
man
wow.
is God.
Different. Yes, the day after, the next day we played against, I don't know who it was, he said, my team talk was yesterday. If you can't run around and try and kill yourself and be almost bursting at the seams for 90 minutes after what you see yesterday with them guys, you don't deserve to be here.
And did you guys win?
Battered the team. Went out like, what? Like, you could pump, your veins were like... Pff.
So he saw the Chilean miners.
Jesus. We had a sponsorship deal with a Chilean wine company at the time, I think, something like that. So he managed to get something like that. I don't know how he worked it. But this is the guy who was thinking of little margins to make a difference, man, in a season. Like, he was just a different character.
Like Fergie's man.
That's why I say to you, like Klopp, I've heard these stories about Klopp. I've heard stories about Klopp taking his team to some house far away all together and saying, all we've got is each other. There's nothing else to do. If you're not prepared to... And apparently it was really, really cold and it was terrible conditions and they had to get close together. And his whole thing was, if you're not prepared to like stay with us under these conditions, then you can't be here the whole season. Get out now.
You need that. It's like something. Sometimes you they'll start a story, yeah, in the team talk, and I'm just sitting there thinking, what is this? We're playing Huddersfield at home, and you're chatting about all this mad stuff that has got nothing to do with
Huddersfield at home.
Huddersfield at home, and then he'll bring it round to like sacrificing yourself for your teammates or for the club, or like, and then you go at the end of it, oh, I get it. Right, get me out there. Like, mad. It's just like, sometimes it's not even about tactics, man. Like, that's why I say about even today, like, my kids, all I stress to my kids, yeah, is work hard. That's it. Outwork anyone in your team. That's it. That's all it's about. Like, look in the changer when you go in there and think, like, what is he doing when he's not here? And then when you get home, think to yourself, if I'm working now a little bit more, I do 10 more passes against the wall, or I get my brother to just go and ping some balls at me, or work on my left foot, and just keep stimulating yourself by saying, is he doing that? No, he ain't. I am. Watch. And then gradually you're going to build a distance between yourself and the next guy who's trying to take your position. Like, that's all I say to my kids. Like, and at school, work ethic overrides everything. Everyone's got a bit of talent at something, but if you work hard with that, You got a chance, man. That's all. Work hard. That's all. And the Fergie was like a big advocate of that. Working hard is not like a... It's not a chore. It shouldn't be a chore.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? You should enjoy working hard because you get rewarded when you work hard.
Do you know what? I think that's what's so lit about football. Football definitely teaches you that. I remember when I first went to come play for a team, I was all smiling and everything. And I remember the manager came up to me and goes, I don't know why you're so happy. You've come to take someone's jersey. You don't look like you're ready to take someone's jersey. And I was just like, what do you mean take someone's jersey? And I think after a year, I was like, I was still on the bench. I was like, oh, this is what it means. And then you start realizing someone else is coming to take your place on the bench and you haven't even made the first team. And that's when you're like, wait a minute. And I think that's when I started. I remember I was like 12 and I said, I need to start working hard. And it's funny because ever since then, I can say that's my biggest attribute is I will work, outwork everyone. Doesn't matter how talented you are, you can be more talented than me, I will outwork you 100%. I'll sleep 4 hours a day for a week. Like, I'm not having it. And I think that's what
passed away. I've never met a harder working guy.
Was it?
Jesus Christ.
That's good though, man.
It's mad.
Yeah, because of football though. Football teaches you, especially I play centre back. Football teaches you. always got to be, for 90 minutes plus stoppage time, the game is not over. So for me, like, this is whole thing's a game. It's not over until the whistle's blown. And I will work every blade of grass. My shirt will be brown, full of mud. Like, that's how I look at everything in life, purely because of football,
like,
man.
It's like the players today, I just think that they got still, when you get to a professional club, you've got so much opportunity there. Like, there's so much that's done for you, like, in today's game. Like, everything is just put on a plate. Like, it's almost to the extent where it feels like it's harder to foul once you get in a professional club, because there's so, as long as you work, there's so many young players that you think, if only you just worked, man,
a little bit harder.
Just if you just put your mind into working rather than to what you can buy or what you can get, just work and you'll be all right. Like, and enough players, you just come out the game and they go, yeah, I messed about. I didn't realise, man. It goes so quick. A year or two in the academy and you're out on your arse at the end of it because you ain't applied yourself properly. Must be the worst feeling in the world. The guilt, the embarrassment you must feel to have to tell people. That's what they should be thinking. Am I going to have to come out of here in 2 years when I'm 18 after I've signed for 16? Everyone's going, pat on the back, well done. My son's going to be a player, blah, blah. Everyone, adulation that comes with signing for a professional team at 16. Leaving school, 2 year scholar now. Fast forward and think how it would feel if you get released, and all the now you're gonna have to go to people. How's it going at Santo Club? Are you still at the professional club? No, I'm back playing Sunday football now. What's the you? If they could give you a little spoonful of that feeling, far more kids would make it. But it's just having the foresight to think, I don't want to get to that point.
That is true. Imagine that, bro.
How would you give advice to young people then? In those situations.
Yeah, well, our mentor for the management company look after me is Nura, and I speak to them on the text. Like, Ben Godfrey now is 21, I'm 21 captain, England.
Baller.
At Norwich.
Mitch, you told Mitch about him. Yeah. Mitch told me about him, bought him on FIFA. Bro, very loyal.
Mad player. He will be, I think he's got a chance to be a big player. But there's other players, Michael Keane, but there's other younger players is the ones I'm interested in a lot as well, because they're the ones you can have an impact on and affect. So players. I just chat to them on social media. Like, I might speak to one of their managers or coaches. How's he getting on, blah, blah. And I'll get a bit of information and just filter that back to them. But no sugarcoating. Just like, bang. How are you doing? And some of them might just try and give you a little line. They're like, yeah, it's going all right. Hold on. But why come you ain't been doing this? Doing your extras? Or your body language is wrong? Sort that out. Blah, blah. And then I get my reward through that now. Seeing the difference. Is there a difference? Have they changed? Have they improved? What are they achieving? And I could sit there sometimes. I've played one mini little part in trying to help maybe just refocus them or something like that. And just being that person to speak to for them is good, man. I get a lot out of that. It's nice. And it's just like, I wish I had more people like that when I was growing up who've had the experience, who could give me a little bit of a point in the right direction. Because it's important, man. Because every kid's going to come to a point in their career, whether they're young, at the beginning, middle or old, where there's a crossroads of a decision to make or to reboot the machine and start refocusing the right way. And they need sometimes just a little guidance in that and pushing it in the right direction. And I think it's valuable when you get that. I remember one time Carlos Queiroz said to me, I was training. This is the time when I felt invincible as well. And he went to me, Rio, your performance is dropping a little bit sometimes. It's like, you're not doing more than you should do. So you're just doing enough, coasting through games. In training, sometimes get the ball. If you pass it out wide or whatever, or through the team, sprint through. I used to think, this guy's mad. What's he talking about? But then it was like that muscle memory, that your body remembering that you run fast all the time. They're getting used to it. So in games, when the game quickens up and becomes a bit of a basketball game, back and forth, your legs and your body's used to it. Do you know what I mean? And all of a sudden, I can't remember the game happened, but it was a fast game. And I just felt unbelievable. I just felt quick, stronger, powerful, could do them long 30, 40 yard runs, easy, no problem. But without that little bit of a push or a little mental note from someone, it don't happen. And they get to that game and it happens and you think, I can't breathe.
That is crazy.
You lose the game 1-0.
The little things. See how all these little things contributed to you guys and you as well, like individually being great. The Ferguson, the Queiroz, the Ronaldos, the kind of, you know, the miners, the all these little things go run through for the first.
Do you know the mad thing is that I'm just in the process now. In time, I'm bringing out an app for younger kids who want to train like professionals, football wise. like it will be on the market soon. We're going to push it out there, but because I'm so like, when I was younger, yeah, I used to go out on a Sunday with one of my best friends, Gavin, walk to a park, Rogers Park, play football and just do passing things, yeah? Just imagination, probably like you guys did, yeah? But was I working right? Was I working effectively to suit my game? And then my kids, I tell my kids, go and get a training drill and go and do it. My boy said to me, Lorenzi went, but I could find a few drills on there, Dad, but what, I don't know which one's right for me. Like, what ones, how do I know that person's telling me, he's telling me that I know that he's the person saying it's the right thing? What's qualifies him to tell me it's the right thing?
Who said that? My boy. iTunes or Simba? iTunes.
I said, okay. So then at the same time, a guy came to me and we just created this app now. Coming, it's launching soon, but it's where kids can train like a pro.
Mm.
It'll be sick, but it's all these little details that I'm trying to put into the internet so kids have got it in their hand. That they just go out and they can see it quick, straight. It's all aggregated in one place.
And get out there as well. Get out there and start playing.
Mm. Yeah, and start
implementing what they're seeing straight away. It's important because sometimes you can train hard and work hard, but are you training efficiently? Are you training effectively for yourself?
100%.
Training smart.
I'm more on the work smart vibe.
Yeah.
You do though. You can make 5 moves in, where some people make 20 moves, you can make 5 moves. I do like the younger generation though. They are expressing themselves more, especially within football. The likes of Sancho, the Hudson-Odois, the full Fodens. You're talking about there's like a little boy for Real Madrid, Kubo. Like he's a proper
Japanese
boy. He's such a baller.
Bad player.
It's like,
what's the Brazilian brother? Vinicius.
Vinicius Jr. He's got the raw talent.
Yeah.
He's technically so good as well. Like, there's so many good young players. Like I said, the Premier League, little James at United is doing really, really well. Just the information you're giving your son. Is this going to be a game that is now dominated by, I would say, the younger demographic? Because growing up, it's always been, when I watched Manchester United, I remember 95, 96, or even before that, everyone loved the Cantonas and maybe the Andy Coles, the more flamboyants. But my dad used to go watch Steve Brucey or watch Brian Robson. Those are the experienced boys that piece it all together. Adams at Arsenal. Watch Tony Adams' car. He's the proper one that understands what's going on. He understands the football pitch. Even later on, he was obsessed with Roy Keane. He was like, that's a leader. That's football. Whereas now, some of the teams, their go-to guy is the Mbappe. Like, he's everything. And even Steven Gerrard kind of changed things. I remember 01, 02 when he got the captaincy. He was very, very, very young. But his leadership qualities for a young player kind of, for me, changed the way I even saw a captain. I always thought of a captain as the older person. But then after, I think without Steven Gerrard getting the captaincy, Cesc Fabregas is never captain at Arsenal. I don't think that ever happens because there's no predecessor that makes you go, no, a captain doesn't need to be a 30-year-old player. It actually can be a player that's 22 with all the qualities of the experienced person at 30, but he has them at a small rate at 22. He can become what that 30-year-old is now. Are we approaching an age where it's just going to be young players predominantly more than the older generation?
It is becoming a younger man's sport almost because the pace of the game is so quick now, man. It's much different. I watch some of the warm-ups and I'm thinking, wow, well, how would I live in there now? Do you know what I mean?
How do you think but you would live there?
Yeah, for real.
No, I'll be all right, bro. My touch is too good, bro. Yeah. No, I'm joking. No, but I just think like the game is so much quicker, man. Back in the day, I could reel off enough names of slow players. Physically baggy. Not now. Like, who's slow? Who's really slow? You look at a team and go, he's slow. And you, Liverpool Adams team, there ain't no... Yeah, where's Charlie Adams playing?
I'm
talking Premier League. Like, where Liverpool team now, who's slow?
Oh, my God.
Look in the City team, who's slow?
Oh.
There is no slow players anymore.
Even Chelsea, mate. They took a break the other day.
Who's slow?
I saw Mason Mount, Pulisic, Pedro was running... Even Tammy's got a bit of pace. Yeah. I was like, this is...
The players that ain't quick in today's game would have been fairly quick in my years, probably. Like, it's mad. So the game is quicker. But leaders are going to be always... They're different, isn't it? It's never the same type of leader. Very, very rarely now, if ever, you're going to see a type of Roy Keane-type leader in today's game because they're not built like that no more. They're not allowed to be like that no more. Like, you see managers getting struck off and coaches in young years for shouting at kids or being too aggressive, getting struck off out of work because of that. So to think that a player's going to be as vocal and as kind of demonstrative and like to the point with players, are they built to deal with that anymore? Like, so you've got to lead in different ways. Like, you look at the difference in leadership between Roy Keane and Steven Gerrard, both great leaders. Steven Gerrard very rarely spoke, said things, didn't really lose it at all. But he's football done the talking. He led by inspiration. He led by a performance. So there's different types. And like, you look at now, Henderson, he seems like he's more vocal, but he's not going to be in a vindictive way or aggressive, super aggressive maybe. And by the way, he plays with application intensity every day. So there's different forms of it, but definitely there's more and more younger players that are coming into the game and becoming stars immediately. Yeah. And that's down to social media as well. The exposure you're getting now is different. Listen, Michael Owen comes out and does what he does at 18, 19 years old in today's game. No one's living with him.
He was ridiculous.
No one's getting the exposure that he got. He is Mbappe on steroids in terms of exposure, of what he's done in terms of like coming out, banging up the Premier League straight away, scoring loads of goals, international. He's on a par with what Mbappe's doing, I'd say, or more.
Scored on his debut Wimbledon.
The goal he scored in the World Cup. Like,
against Argentina.
Like,
insane.
Even and I've spoke Romania. To Michael about this, and I'm sure he's a bit peeved. Like, there's people that compare me to certain names. I won't even say some of the names, but people are saying, "Oh, Mike, he's a great player, akin to Mike." And he's sitting there. I know Michael's sitting there thinking, "Pardon? How dare you associate him with me?" Like, because Michael was a ridiculous. Like, he don't get the respect he deserves, credit wise.
It's his fault.
He was a joke of a player.
His fault. I'm always going to blame Michael Owen for that. I just think, unfortunately, in football, people there's loyalty is massive in football. You say we've got 10 minutes?
5-10 minutes.
No problem. Football's massive. I think loyalty is massive in football. Mm. And people need to have homes and places in which they live. Van Persie's got the same problem. And I just think football fans never forget. They might forgive, but they never forget. Mm. So he had the opportunity to, after his career, go back to Liverpool and be celebrated as one of the greatest finishers of all time. Mm. And he goes to Manchester United, which is fair enough. That is a personal choice you made to go and win the Premier League. But now understand what comes with that decision. And I don't think he fully understood until now, where he realises, wait a minute, I don't have a home. Then he goes and says things about Newcastle. It's like, bro, like, you don't have much homes apart from BT anyway. Like, so those things are his.
Yeah, but I think he would say that as well. He would acknowledge that.
Yeah, of course.
And because, like, and it's not until you retire that you realise that. It's still, if hindsight, it's a lot easier because, like, even we bring back social media, if he had a spat with someone on social media, where's his backing coming from?
He's had a spat. Alan Shearer absolutely closed
that. No, but where's his backing coming from? Like, say Steven Gerrard had a spat with someone. He's got Liverpool all behind him.
Yeah.
Because that's his home where, like, Michael Owen. But that doesn't go against what he was as a player. He was different.
Yeah,
never seen that before. I remember being on a halfway line at Anfield and I thought it was the biggest pitch in the world because of his pace. I felt vulnerable. Wow. Like, this guy, if the ball gets kicked over the top, I'm in trouble.
Oh, wow. Do you remember his goal? Do you remember the Milk Cup on a Friday?
Oh, when he ran for the team. Oh, mad goal.
Michael Owen's goal, I think it was 1996? No, it was before 1996.
Michael Owen was different.
And he used to come on Sky Sports Friday, really, really early on in the Premier League season. The goal this Don scores, only thing is he's Welsh, but that's another story.
No. Not one bit of it is like skill, like over-elaborate skill with what he'd done. Simple. It was the quickest way to goal. That's it. And manoeuvre the balls which and which way to get there. It weren't dubs. It weren't nothing like that. It was get me to goal quick and I'll bang. That was him. Like,
I hate him, Michael Owen. Literally.
Did you?
What do you mean? The FA Cup?
Do you know what?
He's not in the FA Cup final.
He's not like... Oh, yeah, he destroyed you. He's not like... he's so different, like, to what you guys maybe think of him as well. He's a cool guy, man.
Like, you know what? I think as he's settled into punditry, I've started to enjoy watching him. I think early on everybody was a bit critical of the commentary.
I love this.
What's going on? Are your jackets?
Last time we started a podcast like this.
Thank you. We end it like this now.
Thank
you, bro.
Yeah. Nice. This week it seems that we end it with the food, and I read that it used to be ballet. That's sick.
Mm.
Did that help a lot, do you reckon?
I didn't do it because of football. I just done it because, you know what it was? It was something new to do and to get me off the air.
And you weren't embarrassed? You know how it is, you know.
Like, yeah, but I just, you know up, what? You know ballet. When you're like, when you're comfortable in your own skin, yeah? And I just like, if my friends like say anything, like, it ain't nothing to me really.
Did they say anything to you within ballet?
Yeah, like, oh, you do ballet or whatever, but it's like, I used to say, no, I go to a dance place, isn't it? What are you talking about?
So you didn't...
I didn't go, like, and then, but they knew, and I was like, but it's a dance school, isn't it?
Mad.
By the way, there's like, new people there, you know? There are, like, other girls in that there as well.
There
like,
are.
And there are, Plea. Like, this, that, and then people will start going, and I'm doing something different, what? I wouldn't stay in the area all the time. Oh, it's true.
How long did you do it for? Like 3-4 years?
About 4 years.
That's crazy.
It was good, mate. It definitely contributed. Ballet dancing is hard. Don't get it twisted.
No, I know.
I'll send any man to ballet now and you'll be in bits.
But when did you do, what age did you do it?
From about 11 to 14.
It makes 10, sense.
10 to 14.
Helps with the movement, awareness.
Yeah, that's why balance. I look so slick on the pitch.
The 360 spin at West Ham. The most mate. Iconic thing we for a young defender.
Oh, that you seen that clip?
What do you mean, bro? Bro, I can't lie, I used to watch football much more intensely than I watch it now. Like, every second, I couldn't be off the screen. So if a new young player came, like when you first came in the West Ham era of like the Frankie Lampards, and I'm on it. Oh, West Ham got good young youth. I'm watching
You know the mad thing about that, yeah, is my, it goes back to like your friends, yeah? Like on your estate or whatever. And like my friends, when I see, like we're all together now, a lot of us, a core of us, come around Miami, have Sunday dinner with the families and kids and that, and the missus and that. And what's so nice is that, because they never spoke to me about it at the time, but when they talk about when I made it at West Ham and in England and so on, and it was so much, it's like, Rio, like, you hear a lot about jealousy and that, but true friends are happy when you do success and you do well. Like, and a couple of my mates said to me the other day when we was around, like, when you made it, yeah, we made it. Like the feeling, yeah. That's when I thought, you know what? I know my true boys are anyway. But these type of things, they just cement it, like to make me know that that's proper, because that's the way I would have been. You don't understand how that made us feel, really. Like you making it, you going to West Ham playing Premier League football or England, and then breaking the records to go Leeds and Man United. Like we was living that every step with you, like. And you might have been away for a long period of time, just chat to us on the phone for a little bit, but always about, but. We was there, like that feeling is like, that's like when you feel, when you can take other people on the journey with you. Like my boy's best friends come Moscow to Champions League, like
that's mad
random country, like that. For me to see them after and the joy that I see on their faces, and like to World Cups, like in Japan or in Germany, and like I see my friends there. That part of it. You don't really get spoke about, but to be able to go on that journey and to sit back now when I've retired, and then my mates are going, well, back when we was in Moscow and we couldn't get a taxi, no one will take us, and we couldn't get back in the hotel, like all these little things that add to, like, you know what, wow, these are the little things that I didn't even know about properly, but we done it together.
That's lit. They even accepted you with that white suit and white hair.
But that real was, friends. My friends still spud me for that now.
I'd say a pioneer in your game. One of the greatest centre backs
of all time,
outspoken, to some controversial, not to all of us. and a man, I think, that just has stayed true to his word. It's nice. Been a, I think, a pleasure.
Thank you.
Been a pleasure.
Bro. The cameras always bad to do it. Always,
bro. Pleasure. Nice, I mean, nice. Yeah. Hopefully, we'll have you on again in some shape, manner, or form. I don't think we once again covered what we wanted to cover.
There's bare stuff.
There's
bro.
So much. I think this is one of those combos you could go for like 6 hours, really.
100.
I can't lie. I've just arrived from Heathrow. I was.
Is he flagging?
Like at one point. I was like, fuck, no. Like, bro.
Doing that.
Yeah. You know that one? I jet lagged a motherfucker, bro. But I was like, nah, I need to come. Rio, we booked it.
I'm hungry, bud. Grab the food.
But the food's here. Let's munch.
Turn off the mics, bro.
Thank you for listening. Like, comment, subscribe. We don't know how we're going to put this out. I think it's going to, maybe in parts, maybe not. But we'll decide. And then, boom. We'll see you very, very soon. Keep having a nice. And I need to eat this and go to bed. Say, we done, Paul? Are we done?
We're done, man.
Cut the blood, man. Cut, you can cut it.